and welcome to episode 270 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of MI666, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The OG true believer, Tony Esmond.
Hello.
And this week, we're also joined by comic creator, podcaster, abstract artist, and most importantly, the thing he celebrates most in his life, friend of the show, it's Gareth Hopkins. Hello.
Hello. Evening, everybody.
Hey, Gareth. Hello. Nice to have you back, man. What's this now? I'm going to say third or fourth time.
This is my third.
Oh, is it all
yeah,
it is?
Third episode, okay. Yeah. The last one I was on was just before London Super Comic Con, because you got me on to talk about, because everyone's so excited about how busy it's going to be.
Yeah. Was it that ages ago, man. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that's when you had to break up that fight.
I thought you came on for a genre show or something like that at one point.
No, I haven't been.
Yeah, I remember that fight. That was a great weekend.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
I'd forgotten about that until I read after Dan like flagged up your review of it, and I read back, and you were like, "Oh yeah, Gareth broke off a fight." I was like, "Oh yeah."
That was a proper handbags, that one, wasn't it? But it's not fair. It was one of those sort of fights, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, it's because like there's a group of people who had invented a comic just so that they could table and get to all the creators before it opened.
Really?
That's what it felt like, yeah. So they had a comic. I think Sarah bought a copy of it. But they had commissioned signatures from like loads of people. So before it opened every day, they were walking around and getting signatures before it all opened.
Right, okay.
Right. Yeah. That's a scam, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what people were angry about, I think. One of the things people are just generally angry that weekend.
Yeah, I mean, of all the things in the world, I can imagine why that is the thing that's going to make you angry. Do you know what I mean? So it's,
Well, carefree days back then.
Yeah, I know.
There were, weren't they? Yeah, we're leaving sex notes in people's pencil cases. Those were the days.
Yeah, and we're still talking about it now. That's how good a time we had.
Yeah.
And speaking of good times, folks, you're in for a treat this week. We're going to talk about Gareth's ongoing work a bit later as well, because it seems like every other show, or recently every show, we've mentioned his name and his comics, haven't we, really?
Yeah. At least like a couple, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you do always say send a lovely thank you, Gareth. So
yeah, you do. That's nice.
And of course he joins us on the drink and draws and stuff as well, which is
that's getting exciting. Cool.
Yeah. So there's another one coming soon. I think we've got.
I spoke to Tom about the Thought Bubble one, and that is definitely happening.
Yeah, that's definitely happening. But we're going to
out
iron out details
for that.
Yeah, we're going to iron out details for that. So yeah, stay tuned. I believe there's another one coming on the 18th, which is next.
Oh,
week.
Is there?
I think it might be.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not about for that one.
Oh, Tony. Well, the thing is, they're happening on the regs now. So,
no, oh, I didn't realize it was the 18th. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
But don't quote me on that. I mean, all the details. Tom always posts it. He posts it on Twitter. If you follow at this Chucklehead, he's the person that moderates our drink and draws, which happen. If this is your first time listening, I mean, you've got 10 minutes in, and we haven't said anything of any consequence. So well done.
But the
drink and draw that we just came along afterwards and slapped our names on. Tom Curry, the creator of Skilly Bob, puts it together, moderates it, all done via Zoom, and it's just basically just a wonderful space for a lot of creative people to come along, chat, have a laugh, and do some drawing. It's actually the first.
We're getting a bit of a name for having guests on now, aren't we? So we sort out a saucy guest.
Well, we did it once.
We've done it once, and we've got another one coming at Thought Bubble.
I suppose if you kill someone, you do get.
That was so funny, though. The entire room just desperately being as cool as they possibly can.
I saw you look and go, oh, like that, when the name popped up. Because it comes up with the name, doesn't it, on the screen before they actually you see them. Yeah.
We're not going to promise that they're going to be guests to everyone, because essentially the drink and draws are just for people to turn and have a good time and draw some comics and stuff like that. So if you follow at this Chucklehead on Twitter, he posts up details there. And there's always details that go up in our Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk. So find out how to get involved that way as well. So, and Gareth, you've been there for the past couple, haven't you, Gareth?
I've been to everyone. Yeah.
Brilliant.
They're good.
Yeah. So,
1 week I got too drunk and had a hangover the next day.
Really? Did you really?
Yeah, I really did. I just
it's
went
the only time I ever drink anymore, because I rarely drink, you know that, anymore.
Yeah.
And it's the only time I ever drink.
You don't have to drink. You don't have to drink
alcohol. Well, that's it. Nobody knew I was drinking. I was essentially drinking by myself on camera.
Yeah.
Cruel.
And then
that's what we do on our OnlyFans.
Yeah. Have you got like an OnlyFans? Yeah. And how did you explain the hangover the next day then?
Oh, no. My wife knew I sort of walked into the room and just said, I'll just be... And then fell asleep. So.
Fell through the coffee table.
You don't even have to be any good at drawing to come along. Don't think, oh, it's going to... Yeah, because even I draw something. You know, it's like you can just come along.
Yeah.
See, when pre-COVID, if I'd been out liking the drinks and the next day I was feeling a bit rough, I always say, oh, we went out for something to eat and it's not really sat right. I don't feel that great. And then display it off as like a stomach bug or something as opposed to...
Just shit yourself just during the day. Yeah.
You've got to follow through to sort of show commitment.
The eternal icebreaker.
Shit yourself immediately. What's going on?
Just make sure you leave a bit of bark on the back of the toilet when you've been here.
Oh dear. And we've only got 10 minutes in.
It's worse when you're in an office and you leave a bit of bark and then you realise there's no brush in that toilet. That's always a worry, isn't it?
Yeah. And then someone else...
I can leg it out of the toilet, no one know I've been in it. And then just as you're washing your hand, someone comes in, as the trickles of water is still in the toilet.
Shit! I've done it when the gents was full up, so I went in like the open plan one of the big toilet. Anyone can go in there and use it and come out, and there's like a girl going to go in there and you're like, oh, fucking hell.
Sometimes when moments like this happen on the show, I feel like Hello Darkness, My Old Friend just plays in my head as I'm just watching everything. Just let
the lights in your room slowly go down.
But you know what?
Is it what's the Fozzie Bear fucking gif where he's got his head on the table?
Yeah.
You know what isn't deeply unpleasant though?
What's is it Comic Dan? House?
Comic House.
We're almost there. We're almost there, aren't we? We've almost... Yeah. Yeah.
Pete's so proud of us.
Yeah. I mean, Dan, who are Comic House?
I'm
not going to let him do that.
You bullied me with that.
Yeah, and the amount of times I've said this for like over like 200 episodes, and whenever I say that, you still like go blank.
Episode 100, they came on, didn't they? I remember I listened to it when we did 200. I went back and I listened.
Oh wow, bloody hell!
Where's the time? Been a while.
Yeah. But Comic House have stuck with us. Yes, they're an indie comic marketplace. We love them. When you check them out, you'll love them too. There's a huge selection of titles on the Comic House database. Lots of people self-publish and they list their book on there for free and start selling straight away. And the app, definitely people. In this time when, yes, I know that the cogs of the world are starting to turn a bit more and people are going outside a bit more. But, you know, we're still going to want to read comics digitally. And sometimes the only way to do it is on something like an app, like a Comic House app.
Yeah.
I mean... Just imagine indie comics, just a click that you could just read a huge like sort of selection. Like, what sort of stuff could they read, Dan?
We've got Gimp City 1, where the
what
main characters.
What's that one you start with?
It's the first in the queue, and the characters dangling from a line above the city, and they're saying, "Ow, my anus." So that's quite timely.
I'm on board.
We've got Camp VA07 by James McCulloch, Autism and Anxiety Chapter 2 by Sam Webster. And we've got Abraham King, The Hand of Glory, which looks great. And, Teddy Boy.
Because you put a bit of drama into that line reading then, Dan. Abraham King. Yeah, lovely.
And it's got The Perilous Adventures of the Mystery Man of the Future. That's the subheading.
Cool.
That's nice.
That's a bit
He's walloping someone in the face with his big boots. So what's not to like?
His big boots.
Boots.
Oh, right. Okay,
with his big boots. Are they big like the ones you had on camera earlier? You had a pair of big boots on camera earlier, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
No one will ever know.
But for a laugh, I put an image
No,
of
it. Dan, don't. Just let me stop you there. Now, if you want to read all of those comics and more, then go to comichouse.com. It's a subscription app, only £3 a month, and I'm sorry, but that's cheaper than pretty much 90% of weekly indie sort of digital comics at the moment. Something that anyone that's listened to this show for time knows that I get a bit pissed off. It's always the thing. I try not to rant on social media, which probably means I don't go on social media that much. But every time I see like a page count and a price, and the two don't really match up, if you know what I mean. Yeah. I just think, I need to vent about this, and then I just let it go. And I get on with my life, and things are okay.
Like with the PDF sales on a comic, I've not run a Kickstarter of any kind of like worked on one. Do you rely heavily on the PDF sales?
With a Kickstarter, it's mostly physical.
I mean, yeah. It can all depend, yeah. I guess. I mean, Ryan K. Lindsay, obviously, he always does a lot of his Kickstarters, always $1, isn't it? Always the cheapest maximum thing, so at least he'll get a decent amount of $1 pledges.
That's just a good entry drug as well, you start reading him, you can kind of, you're in there.
Yeah.
I can't justify buying single-issue comics from the States right now.
No.
For the shipping is just...
No. But you, and some of them I'm desperate for.
Yeah, I'd love to.
But you out there can justify signing up to Comic House, getting access to all of that. There's a 14-day free trial. Go to comichouse.com and find out more. And if you're an indie creator that has like all ages and kids books, then get in touch with the Comic House guys, because at the moment they're really trying to cultivate like an all ages section, like to get more and more kids into comics. And we've talked about kids comics and getting the next generation of readers into comics a lot on this show. It's actually some of the more serious conversations we've had, never mind all this nonsense that you've just been listening to for the past 5 to 10 minutes. Definitely if you've got an all ages book and you want to get more eyes on it, then definitely put it on Comic House.
And you will make some money out of it.
You can sell physical copies as well for Comic House.
So go to comichouse.com to find out more. And thank you, as always, to Pete and the guys for supporting the show. And the show itself, as you can tell, we're a little bit... what's the word? We're excited this week.
We come up with this yesterday, didn't we? Was it yesterday?
No, it was the day before.
Was it Friday? Okay.
It makes it sound like we did it last minute.
Yeah. What?
That's just every other show. But we decided, every so often, we talk about comic book covers, and we've done some breakdowns of comic book covers, etc., and we've had fun doing it. We've had some guests on, and Gareth, as well as being an amazing comic creator himself, he's a man that knows and loves comics. Anyone that's had a chat with him at a comic convention will know that.
Or a comic mart.
He speaks our language. But we thought we'd look at the world of comic covers, and we'd talk about some covers that we love, and not necessarily these aren't necessarily our favourite sort of like personal covers or anything like that. Well, they could be, I don't know. And we're going to say from the outset, art is subjective. You may like some of the ones that we don't like, and vice versa, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
These are just going to be our opinions that we're going to talk about.
I mean, you might like the covers we're gonna say we don't like, but if you do like them, then listen to us and we'll change your mind.
It's not a personal attack on your tastes.
It is a little bit.
We're going to have some fun doing it, and probably surprisingly, we might actually get some serious comic chat about it, because I always find that we normally do. I always think it's going to be a stupid topic, and then we end up. It's the most serious part of the show when we talk about things like this.
To me, if you go into Forbidden Planet, as you walk in at the moment, they say, can you only pick up what you're going to buy? That's their phrase.
Yeah.
Which is a big statement,
That's tough.
So we're basing our purchases a lot of the time on what the cover looks like.
It's a world that they say you can never judge a book by its cover, but you kind of have to these days. So the world of the comic book cover is never more important. But rather than just go in for the modern stuff and just rip everything apart or just praise all of these modern comics, we're sort of mixing up. We're looking at some older ones. Some of them are a couple of years ago. Some of them are older.
Yeah, mine's well old.
And Gareth, of course, have we all been on the Alpha Pod, Gareth?
No, I've not. Hasn't. No.
We're trying to arrange it now. Yeah, we're trying, and I just sort of got a bit fed up of it, to be honest. I honestly don't know how you've done this for so long.
Because we've been drunk, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Get yourself a co-host, Gareth. It's easy when there's more than one of you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's like going to the gym. If you go on your own, it's kind of, fuck it off tonight, see biscuits. When there's someone going with you.
And,
I can't let it down.
You don't go to the gym and you what?
You can say, fuck it, I'll eat biscuits.
Biscuits. I thought you said sea biscuits. I thought that might be a reference I didn't understand.
Yeah. Or you could just watch the film Sea Biscuit with Tobey Maguire.
When Dan's not at the gym, he's just watching Sea Biscuit with Tobey Maguire.
And eating biscuits.
Eating biscuits while watching Sea Biscuit. Oh my God, he's already gone wrong.
Playing a game with biscuits.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about some comics covers that we like. And what we're going to do with this show, it's another, I say interactive, basically there's going to be a link that you can check out. Comics are a visual medium. This is an audio podcast. So we've got a collection, all of us that are on the show today, we've already sort of shared the covers that we're going to talk about. And some of them are just going to be honourable mentions because some of them.
We've got a few of those.
You just have to mention.
We got a bit excited, didn't we, about that?
Yeah. I'd say when you start talking about your comic, obviously the name and issue number, etc., artist, and then try and give a bit of a description so people have got an idea.
Yeah,
is that fair?
And if you're listening, look it up while we're talking.
Yeah, exactly. All of these covers should be easily sort of searchable on the internet.
Yeah.
We will also put together a PDF of our choices. You know, if you're listening later or you go on the Podbean website or whatever, it'll be on the links as well. So, so for the next hour and a bit, we're just going to have some fun and talk about some comic covers we like and some ones that we're not necessarily fans of and some ones that are like WTF.
Yeah.
And we're trying not to... Lots of people are going to go, all right, let's hear the Rob Liefeld. We're trying not to...
Well, I've purposely picked ones I've never talked about before
exactly,
as well.
Exactly, exactly.
Because I think everyone will go, he'll do like a Marvel Bronze Age cover. Yeah. That's not what I'm doing. So, yeah.
There may be some honourable mentions about some covers that we probably all know about.
Yeah.
But we're trying to do something a little bit different. And it's been interesting because for me personally, I don't know what it's like, been like for you guys, but when it comes to comic book covers you love, it's always a joy. There's always something, you know, the joy is in finding something that's a little bit different to the norm. The one I picked up was just when I was in a comic book shop and the cover stood out to me and I just wanted that issue, so I got it. So I thought that's a perfect example of it. But to talk about comic book covers you're not a fan of, it's difficult because I guess I don't want to be in that mindset of I hate that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have ones that immediately sprang to mind. I did have to Google search like some bad covers and then see what the internet dug up. And of course, when you see those lists, you disagree with a lot of them because some of them are just people waffling on. And then there's a case.
Yeah, they are. They have a lot of people with not a great deal of knowledge, aren't there?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Clickbait, much like this show. but yes, right. Without further ado, without enough of me waffling, you know what the topic's going to be. Shall we? Who would like to go first?
Ooh.
I talked for about 10 minutes.
Let's get the guest.
Yeah,
it's always
the
guest.
Yeah. So Gareth, this comic book cover that you're a big fan of.
Yeah. Okay. So it's Batman Adventures number 16, which came out in 1993 or 1994. The cover is by Mike Parabek, Rich Burchett, and Rick Taylor. I'm guessing because it doesn't actually credit the covers very often, but they're the art team on the inside. And so it's, for people who don't know Batman Adventures, it was the spin-off comic from the animated series.
Mm.
And it's one of my favourite comics.
I remember you saying that once before. You said it's like one of the best Batman comics.
Oh, it's so good. So good. And they do so much with each issue. And it's very rare that they have more than like four panels on a page. And they still manage to do this entire self-contained thing. I don't want to rhapsodize too much, but I'll talk about that a bit with this cover. So on the actual cover of it, you can see Batman is pulling away like a sheet, and in the foreground, bottom right, is a stack of dynamite with a Joker's face clock on it and the words, "Boom, you're dead." And then he's got a look on his face of, wow, that's surprising. it's difficult to explain, but I saw this when I was a lot younger, and I've been trying to like recreate that, the expression on his face of like, it's just a really difficult expression to get. Anyway, so
because it's interesting because like it seems like he hasn't seen what's
read it. He's sort of like, what's under this?
But like the expression is totally, huh?
Yeah. And but what they've what's also really clever is because there's not very much in this. There's not a lot of detail and stuff, but you can see that he's like in a wooden building or like a rough building from where they've like pencil lined instead of it in the background. And then just through a door in the background, you can see the top of a boat. And you can sort of like see it says SS, so you know it's a boat. So immediately know he's like at in a warehouse at a docks. So that's just like there. It sets it up. And what I love about this cover the most of all is it's actually the first panel of the comic.
Nice.
Yeah.
So when you actually open the comic, the next thing you see is that bomb going off and him being thrown into the water.
Wow. Okay.
That's a nice setup.
Yeah, and I haven't seen it elsewhere. I can't think of another example of it happening. But just the style, like how stylized this is. I'd love Mike Parowek and Rick Burchett together. There's just something about the sort of the way that they work together, which just always gets me. And so there's like a Dutch angle on the cover as well. So it's not, which means it's sort of tilted to the side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it just does so much with so little.
And it's got a corner box. I love a corner box as well. Yeah.
And also what's most galling is that on the top of every issue of Batman Adventures, it was like win original Batman Adventures art. And even now we'll look at that and go, could I send off and get some Batman Adventures art? But yeah, it winds me up that when I was reading these before, I didn't actually write in and try and win some. But anyway, yeah, so that's mine. And the rest of the issue is also incredible because it's a comics-based issue. The Joker kidnaps a young penciler and gets him to create a comic of his crimes as he goes. So Batman is following clues that Joker's left in this comic that's being released. And it's broken down to three chapters, which are named after famous comics works. So the first chapter is called Seduction of the Innocents, which is named after the comic code book. And then you've got How to Draw Comics the Joker Way.
All right, cool.
And what's the last one? Comics and Sequential Death, I think it is. and it's just fantastic throughout. It's but yeah, that's it. I don't want to talk. We talk about covers, not comics. So yeah, that's my cover.
It's nice. It's got a bit of framing where these kind of like the hands, Batman's hands pulling the sheet up. It's kind of that's framed with the cape and the kind of the light behind him that brings it all into focus in the center of that image. I guess you've even got the what they call the rafters, the beams.
Yeah,
like they kind of bring it in too. It's got a nice bit of composition going on that one.
And there's a real there's storytelling, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I love in covers.
A lot
that's going to get talked about a lot today.
Yeah. There are a lot of covers that are just, sometimes they're just nothing, are they? They're nothing at all. There's not even...
No.
It's the whole Diamond Previews syndrome, isn't it? Where they've got to get a cover in there. So they've got a lot of stock footage pictures of Batman, or used to, certainly.
Yeah.
Sitting on the top of a building or something, and they all go in there and you think, well, that's fucking boring. Mm. Yeah.
And the Batman Adventure stuff was always I'm always impressed by these artists that manage to not mimic, but you know, the style of the animated show.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you know, and there's a lot of people that have done that, you know, not just with animated shows, you know, with just say Laura Harrell, for instance, you know, old Beano stuff, you know, having to adapt the style to for these characters and stuff. And that's a hell of a talent.
I think that's a bit of a tough gig, to be honest.
Well, yeah, because as an illustrator, like I'm sure Dan and Vince have had this, where someone says, like, can you draw like this? And then, like, gives you reference, which is totally different from what you'd normally do.
Yeah.
And it is, it takes, like, it's a special skill to be able to do that.
Yeah. There was a freelance job I saw, but someone touting for a comic thing, they said, I need you to draw like this artist. I think someone said, why don't you just approach him? And it's like, well, because they're charged thousands and thousands. Yeah. And I thought, well, see what this art style is like. And I looked at it and I was like, couldn't do that in a fucking million years.
Yeah.
It was like kind of these cutesy painted animals. It was just way out of my ballpark. It was like, no, I can't do that. Just never going to deliver that. Nice one.
Yeah, it's a great cover, this one, I must say. And it is definitely a comic book that... I think I need to check out more of, because there's a lot of Batman stuff that just doesn't interest me. Batman doesn't interest me at the moment, but the animated show and that sort of stuff will always interest me, because that was some of the best Batman stuff, to be honest.
Do you remember ever watching, I remember the first time, like, they said, oh, I've got like this Batman cartoon, like, new starting. It's like, and I remember watching it on the Saturday morning. It was something like that Life of Kitten or something.
It was on ITV, wasn't it? It was that, that Warner Brothers. Was it What's Up, Doc, or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it had the
That intro, fuck me. I was like, this is Batman. You got it, like, bang on. I loved it.
Yeah.
But, well, yeah, because for me, like, the versions of the characters that they have in there are, like, the archetypes now.
Yeah,
and I love everything about it. And but yeah, you can. They a few years ago they collected them all. There's like four volumes of like the initial run of Batman Adventures. It's definitely worth picking up. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I have to put that on the wish list. Brilliant. All right, and Dan, do you want to go next?
Sure. Yeah, I've got mine by one of my favourites, Mike Zeck. It's Captain America. Issue 321. Who else did whatever on the cover? Mike Zeck and John Beatty. This I was well into Captain America at this phase. I was kind of like this. Who I had the list going through and getting the back issues.
I read this today. This issue, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Hands up, man. Yeah.
When I got this one, I was like, this Captain America. This one. It's got Captain America. And he's spraying an Uzi. There's no sign of his shield. He's like fully aggressive, framed on black. And it's just completely not what you'd expect to see Cap doing. It's kind of...
And it's a big story point in that book.
Yeah.
Because he does do that and he does feel bad about it. It's a bit of a strange issue, but yeah.
It's a strange one because I think there's Flag Smashers in it, which is kind of like... I wasn't mad on that character. He was like a kind of like anarchist terrorist who wanted to bring down world governments. He kind of wore like this kind of crazy black and white suit with a cape. And so I wouldn't, maybe at the time I was kind of a bit more forgiving of it, but now, like, why would a terrorist wear that get up?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You'd kind of imagine him being a bit more rough and tumble.
Is he sort of no borders? Is he kind of that? Is that his idea?
I think so.
Because he travels about as a kid or something. It's his backstory, isn't it? He travels about as a kid and he didn't feel at home anywhere, and that turned him into a terrorist or something. I think there's a bit of that going on.
Because he's
No, he's not sort of USA sort of Boogaloo boys, is he? He's against nation state. Is that right?
He's not against the US. He's against like all kind of countries and just breaking them all down.
Yeah,
and he's kind of got this big weightlifting style belt with a picture of the globe on it, and he carries around like a massive mace. I'm not sure if he was designed just entirely to fight Cap, but in the comic they're holding like if memory serves, a congregation in a church, and they're going to execute them, and Cap's got this gun and he's got no option but to blast them up, or was he going to kill the people? He does it, and it's like, oh, okay, that's pretty dark. But cover wise like the muscularity that Mike Zeck works into it. And the kind of like the muzzle flash is kind of lighting up Cap, and then he's got like surrounded by the darkness. It's a real striking image.
And it's an interesting one because when you think back on it, it was heralding or it was sort of foreshadowing the fact that Cap in what 6 or 7 issues from them would be giving up being Cap.
Yeah.
And him sort of falling into the darkness like that by spraying a machine gun, unlike the Cap that we knew at the time.
Yeah.
It sort of plays into that story, isn't it? It's almost like a narrative in covers. Do you know what I mean? Yeah,
because he essentially sort of says, I can't do this anymore. It's kind of, isn't that why he's kind of lost the
and
way?
He gives it up to that geezer, didn't he? US
agent.
Yeah.
And that goes even worse.
I think Walker's one of these S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, isn't he, in it? Is that right?
I can't remember. It's a little worse.
I can't remember either. I'll have to have a look. Yeah.
But he sort of goes through the augmentation process, doesn't he?
What
was that called? That process that they basically you'd make him is like unlimited class wrestling or something. I can't remember.
It was, wasn't it? I think he was part of that because it wasn't. Is it Battlestar? Who's the character he says like is Bucky, wouldn't he?
Yeah,
I think he was part of that, wasn't he? Yeah,
I quite like that character motivation because they had like Battlestar running around as like Bucky in the Bucky costume. And he's like, oh, I'm a bloody grown black guy. I can't dress up as a teenage white kid.
Yeah, it did look a bit weird.
And they bring it up in story. Go, we're going to redesign you. You're going to be this character, Battlestar. And I was like, oh, yes, that's an in kind of continuity, in story changing with a character making the changes. I really like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about this again elsewhere, but to me as well, you can't read this without having something like The Boys in your mind.
Yeah.
Because he's walking about, you know, he gives a kid a flag jacket to wear because he's part of his little internet, Captain America, because he's put this kid's part of his little internet band of people who give him warnings about world problems. And he gives him like a little jacket with the stars and stripes on. Can you imagine people wearing that now on the streets?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
like, get lynched.
Yeah. It's a really weird one. Yeah, but
the idea of having like a network of kids telling you about international terrorism.
And it's sitting on the internet, yeah.
Could happen, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, if you try it now, it'd be a load of old weird sex offenders sitting there pretending to be kids, isn't it? Yeah, it's like...
God,
go around and duff someone up for
yes.
Yeah, can you send my jacket in XXL?
Yeah.
So that's mine.
Good,
very cool. Tony, do you want to go next?
Yeah, House of Secrets. Now, House of Secrets issue 132. For anyone who's following along at home, it's Bronze Age. Obviously, it's a boxer lying on the floor whose face has been. It's hard to tell. I remember looking at this as a kid and thinking, has he got a disease or something on his face? Or has he just been pummeled or something? And standing over him is the referee dressed with the sort of white shirt, bow tie kind of thing, doing like the count. But his head is a skull instead.
Yeah.
Mm. And in the shadows behind him, you've got his opponent. He's sort of looking shadowy, looking sinister. And above, you've got all the grandstand lights shining down, and you can just make out what is probably an audience in the background. Mm. It's done by Ernie Chan. I'm a big fan of Ernie Chan stuff, especially his inking over Buscema on the Conan books. As I looked at it as a kid, my head was already trying to work out what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got, there's a sinister, there's these escape, House of Secrets and House of Mystery and stuff, and some other similar sort of books that DC were putting out were like, when they were doing those showcase collections, they were great because they were like having the Twilight Zone in a comic.
Gotcha.
There was always a twist at the end. It was like a people centric, you'd have a narrator. A bit sort of a crypt keeper kind of character, and they'd introduce a story, then you'd have the story, and there would always be a twist at the end. And they were clever written books, you know. They were, you often didn't guess what was going to happen. And this one, my mind's, because I knew what those books were about, my mind was already racing, thinking, well, why is he looking up? What's happened? You know, is he thrown the fight? Is he a zombie? You know, is he turning into some kind of monster on the floor?
Also, the referee has a skull for a head.
Yeah. So is he death? Is he fighting? Yeah. Is he in hell fighting opponents? Or, you know, all these sort of things were going through my head, and the view as well, the angle of the shot where you're looking up into the lights, it's almost you've got his view, haven't you? Almost.
Mm.
Yeah. I just really like it. It's full of sinister foreboding and foreshadowing, and
he's absolutely mullered, isn't he? The geezer on the deck.
Yeah.
He's like mouth guards out. Like spit all over the floor.
He's just been done by that sort of super buff bloke standing behind him, isn't he?
That guy behind him looks inhuman because he's got the, like dark pits for eyes with like a white dot in each.
Yeah.
I'd probably stay down.
And I love I love the way they used to split. So some DC and Marvel. I think I showed you a Werewolf at Night cover earlier. Yeah. That does this where you've got the title, but it's on a solid coloured black background.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it splits the page in a third, but. Because it's a bit of class, you've got the head of the top end of the skull overlapping that,
it breaks the border and
jumps
out
a little bit at you.
One of the things that makes this cover even stronger, I think, is because they've picked the colours that go with the House of Secrets well.
Yeah,
if this was a bright green, if this was a bright blue with the text over the top of it, it would really draw away from the image. Wouldn't it
would do, and you got it almost the same colour as the lights shining down, and there's a real balance on the page. The circular price on the right and the DC bullet on the left. Yeah. I just really like that. It's, if I'm going through a long box of back issues and I see that DC sign, I think, oh, good, this is going to be good.
Yeah. The only thing that's that, I mean, this is purely because they all had to stick it on the Comics Code Authority.
Yeah
it's a little
bit intrusive,
they've
got to put
it
somewhere, haven't they? That's there, and that's very much an example of shit. Where the hell are we going to put this?
bang it in.
When you think these guys were probably literally cutting it out and pasting it on, you know, it's sort of, it's not a graphic designer moving this stuff around, is it? It's,
interesting graphic design wise, like the guy's skull, the referee's skull, breaks the top there and brings his body, brings you down to the boxer's face. You're now looking over his opponent. When you check your opponent, the arm brings you back to the skull. And you've got that kind of bit of dead space in the middle. So it's a good little kind of like, it holds your eye in the image.
Yeah. I remember looking at it and thinking, is that Jonah Hex as well? Some part of me thought. It does relate to a story. House of Secrets didn't always relate to a story inside, but it does relate to a sort of immortal warrior who comes out through a Spartacus style pit fighting stuff, and he ends up in a boxing ring and stuff like that. So it does kind of tell the story that you're expecting inside, which didn't always happen in horror comics back then, you know.
Throwing a kind of question to you all. Would you consider there'd be two covers, one which is kind of like indicative of the contents within, kind of like a glimpse of what the story is going to be, and that's how they get the readers in, and ones that's kind of just a good looking image, like a pinup? Would you go for one over the other? Or have you got a preference?
Go for the story. I'm tired of the pinup thing. I really am. There's only so many times you can do it.
Yeah, but I think nowadays the pinup thing is a thing, but certainly one of the ones I'm about to talk about in a moment is, it's not so much a pin-up, it's not so much story, but it's almost like that classic sort of movie poster, something to draw the reader in. Yeah. And they don't do that so much anymore.
Is that the Alf one, you mean?
Yeah, the Alf one.
The artist name escapes me there, but the Punisher comic with Garth Ennis, when they had like the sort of realistic ones with the drawing.
Tim Blackstreet.
Bradstreet.
Bradstreet, yeah. Bradstreet or an R&B.
Really like his art, but like those succession of covers didn't really do anything for me. Mm. It was like, it didn't really tell me what was going on in the thing. One kind of pretty much looked, I'm probably really offending someone here, so apologies, but like, they didn't really work for me. I was just like, go over the cover and into the comic we go,
it's interesting because, you know, I remember I was quite a fan of, I've got one of his art books, I think. Mm. And I was a fan of those Punisher covers, but I think I'd agree with you if I look back on them now, Dan. I think I'd
be
I think one of the things about covers as well, though, is that you need to be able to use them to tell you which issue you're picking up. So you've got 20 issues of it, you need to know. And I was going to pick out a Defenders one as my favourite one, the old style ones. But because all of the issues involve a fight with all the Defenders, it's really hard to pick out one from the rest.
Yeah.
I think I have a real problem with BPRD and Hellboy, because a lot of the BPRD covers look very similar. Mm. And I've got a list on my phone of what I haven't got and I have got, you know, just so I know which one I'm buying.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that, I'll save this for when we're talking about the other stuff. We're in the positive zone.
Yeah.
We're in the world.
Sorry. Good. So that's House of Secrets, House of Mystery. If you can get any of them, you can still get them cheap. They're really good stories. They're done by a lot of great Spanish artists and Argentinian artists and that sort of thing. Really good stuff. Yeah, Malaysian. Yeah.
What about you two with the preference on cover? Say, if you're going to choose between the pin-up or the story, which one would you guys go for?
I always go for the story. I do like a designed cover, I've sort of fallen into, like, if the cover has got nothing at all to do with the inside, it sort of winds me up a little bit. I spent my entire life telling my kids not to be wound up by like inconsistencies and stuff, because it's just like, you'll just end up being bored and starting a YouTube video where you just look for Easter eggs and trailers and stuff. Yeah. But one of the comics I was going to pick out as my bad one was An Uncanny X-Men, which has Cyclops and White Queen fighting on, but they're not in the comic, and it that wound me up. So,
the world of the variant cover makes that even murkier now as well.
Oh my god. There's no cats dressed as Captain America in this comic.
Let's make that comic. Right, okay. My pick, which came about because I happened to be out and about, popped into the comic book store, and I looked at the back issue bins. I didn't know what I was looking for. I thought, I'll just see what cool covers. I don't know why. I'm in this zone at the moment where, and I think it's something that was tapped into for the first time I went to a comic mart, just looking at those older sort of 70s, 60s sort of books.
You know, it's called Age, Vince.
I mean, these were the books that were before my time. Do you know what I mean? There wasn't the 80s one, but, you know, that aesthetic as well, you know, whereas the Heroes for Hire or, you know, like you say, the Defenders covers, and there's all these ones that there's a certain energy to them, there's a certain action and a delivery, which I've just become more of a fan of. And certainly it was a time of like exploitation films and that kind of, you know, a lot of covers made big statements, didn't they, on with characters and stuff. And I picked up a couple of back issues of a series from DC, from Cobra, K-O-B-R-A. This is a character. I'm not a DC aficionado. I didn't know. I mean, it's a villain book, which immediately piqued my interest because I thought, is this a book about the bad guy at this time? That's quite interesting. This, admittedly, and it does sort of tie into something I think Gareth was saying as well. This, the one I picked out, looks like an issue one. It looks like the ultimate issue one cover. Yeah. It's actually number 5.
Okay.
But for me, this would have been a perfect sort of issue one sort of cover. And it's basically, it starts off with, it's got the same, it was before the DC Bullet times as well. So this is the same sort of logo, I think, Tony, you've got the House of
Yeah, Spirits, same one. It? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is around 1978. Cover okay. is the artwork is from Rich Buckler and Frank McLaughlin.
Yeah,
Rich Buckler. Yeah, I think we should take a drink every time we say his name because he's on everything, Rich Buckler. And he shouted at me once. I told you that story, didn't I?
Excellent. Yeah.
I mean, that's not why I picked it.
A
everyone.
Day.
Yeah. Just but this is it's a standard. It's like the cover is being sort of burnt away, and the main sort of figure is stepping forward towards the reader. You've got some sort of bullets on the side with like the three heroes, and it's got these messages just splashed across it. I mean, immediately I love the fact that the comic, and I've got the issue afterwards, and the headline is always "The Deadliest Man Alive is Cobra." I mean, that's just fucking brilliant.
There's a Kirby creation, wasn't it? Kirby creation.
Yeah. I looked this up afterwards and found that out, which is everything comes back to Kirby in the end. Everyone.
There you go, man. Yeah.
And it's got a box underneath saying, if he can't conquer the world, he'll destroy it. Amazing. And the heroes at the side, who just look like your standard sort of 70s.
I've got to be honest with you, man. I do love that. You know how much I love this sort of shit, and I love this cover. But those three do look like the same man with a different wig on.
Yeah. But only those three men stand between Cobra and his goal. Yeah. And so I just thought, oh, this is cool. It's got a great energy. And like I say, I did think it was issue one. And the thing I think that made me decide to buy it is there's a box by the barcode at the bottom pointing towards Cobra, and it just says, warning. Just because you're not paranoid doesn't mean he isn't after you. I mean, what?
What? Yeah. You're not paranoid.
I was like, what is this? What is this? It's almost, at first I think it was initial sort of, I was intrigued by it. But the more I looked at the cover, the more I loved it. And I think because I didn't know the character, I didn't know, you know, like I say, I'm more usually in the Marvel world, the more I looked at it, the more I just liked it even more. The colours and
the good thing about that, with the white background, it doesn't make the Comics Code thing stick out too much, does it? Yeah. That's a good thing as well. Yeah. Well, I noticed in the picture that you sent us, even though I can see that you bought a corn on the cob, the there's a picture.
Yeah, you did.
Corn on the cob, top left hand corner.
Oh, lovely.
On the left, is that another issue of Cobra you got there, isn't it? Did you buy a couple of issues?
Yeah. I bought two issues, yes. Number 6.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Still the deadliest man alive because he wants to rule the world.
They can't be comfortable with those scaly costumes, can you? I always think
that. Yeah, but the thing is, well, maybe they're comfortable on the inside and the scales are just like a texture thing on the outside.
Maybe. Why don't you grow a beard like that? I'd like to see you with that beard.
Which beard?
The beard he's got. It's like a weird sort of lift their teeth.
Oh, like fangs at the bottom. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
Has there ever been a good snake-based superhero, or are they always villains?
They're normally villains, aren't they? Come on. I mean, Captain America had a whole fucking gang.
Serpent Society.
The Serpent Society.
That's coming up soon in that run you just mentioned, Dan. That's only about 10 issues onwards.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, good. I really like
that's
that.
That's a good run. Yeah.
And certainly reading this book was always an experience. And interestingly enough, it's one of those ones where when you open the first page, it's almost like they've tried to replicate exactly what the cover was.
Okay.
Again.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work as well.
Oh, they got the same bloke, just with a different coloured face as well.
Well, the thing is, the background...
What is that guy? What is the last picture? Is he just like a sunburnt bloke who's at the beach?
He's got a turban on,
yeah,
hasn't he?
Yeah.
But his face just looks like really red.
The other two blokes don't concern. The one at the bottom just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. Look at my beard. Look at this beard. It's cool. he's bought corn on the cob. He's all right.
Yeah. But on the inside, there's I'd say there's a bit more detail, but the cover, it's definitely one of those ones where you can see whether the effort that they put into the cover, and it's not so much on the inside.
Gotcha.
Okay.
And the colouring has made the background
red. Yeah.
Made the background red, which on the inside.
The cobra's a great design. The word cobra with that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that logo.
A snake taking over the world in that. Yeah. Oh, just look at that. It's perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's two little things as a graphic designer. It's picking out, and I love it for it, is the K and the A are both going over the two circle logos in each corner.
Yeah.
And there's a tiny little white line to break the line.
And it
gives it, pop it out a little bit more.
I tell you something, obviously after discovering this character, I went to Google, like, what is this character, you know, because it just seemed like, reading the comic itself, it's that, you know, that
didn't Kirby write it, and then someone else went, no, I don't like it, and they basically rewrote all the panels and the word blocks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, something different. Yeah,
and it disappeared. Yeah. I think it had three issues, and then it disappeared, and then came back. And it was seven issue run.
There you go. You got your goal. Buy the rest of them.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Become like a generic bad guy?
He became a generic Batman villain. As well,
I think he's in the what's the trade I gave you for your birthday, V? One I gave you a DC trade, didn't I?
Oh,
what's the ones based on chess pieces? Checkmate. Yeah,
Checkmate,
I think they're villains in Checkmate.
And
doesn't he have like goons that he has?
But the thing is, the design that he's got in here, which very much screams Kirby to me, when you see him.
Yeah.
All of the modern stuff, it looks terrible. And, I think he's sort of lost the mask as well. He's got a hood over the top, so you just think, oh,
that's
well,
right. Yeah,
it's more generic. Yeah. I even saw one, I think, where someone did DC did a one-shot comic of Cobra, and the word itself just looks awful. Do you know what I mean? When you've got a logo like this, celebrate it. For God's sake, that's amazing.
I'm surprised it's not on Comixology, because you would think with a bit of Kirby going on, it'd be on there, but it's not, is it?
Yeah, I think, But it's certainly... I think when I found out that he was just sort of amalgamated into like the Batman, as soon as they become part of the Batman villain, it's like, well, good luck standing out from that crowd.
Mm. Yeah.
How much was it, mate?
This issue was, I think it's £4 for this one.
That's all right, mate. That's all right.
It wasn't too bad.
When you think it's from the 70s, that's all right,
mate. Yeah. Yeah. And issue 6 was about £5, actually. They're the only things I bought in the comic book shop. I just thought, spoil myself.
I'm not sure if I'd want him more coming at the reader or the viewer, or if he's okay coming at the bottom right.
He's not coming direct at the reader. He's sort of like off to one direction. I cannot tell you what that flaming pole in his hand is. Make of that what you will.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's made that bloke's face red.
Yeah.
They sometimes do that when the comic character rips through the cover, you can see the interior pages.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I thought that it was going to be like that, and when I opened it up, it's strange. I'll take a picture and send you the...
Another slight critique is, and we'll get onto this with my bad one, is the box with the signatures in. It's too front and centre for me. It's just...
Yeah.
That's actually my bad one as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, nice one. Well, that brings us nicely round.
Yes.
Hey.
But
should we go back into the same order?
Yes. Yeah, I would like to see this cover on a white T-shirt. I think that'd be really great, actually.
Yeah, nice one. Yeah.
So, do we want to do our worthy mentions in the middle?
Yeah.
What before we get on to the hilariously? Well, actually,
let's do the bad ones first, because the worthy mentions are quite hilarious, aren't they?
Yeah. Okay.
A palate cleanser.
So
a refreshing sorbet.
So now we're going to talk about some covers that, I don't know, I wouldn't say we outright hate, but I think they're all ones we've looked at and gone, huh?
It just doesn't work for us.
I don't know if you remember, the one I'm going to mention is one we laughed about in the first year of this podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
But in all ways, we've done that face that Gareth was talking about Batman doing on his favourite cover. We've all done that face when it comes to these bad covers. So without further ado, Gareth, what cover are you not such a fan of?
So I've picked out X-Force number 107. which came out in 2000. It's by Wilch Potashio and Jerry Alanguilan, and I think they're both Filipino artists. Wilch is obviously quite famous, and apparently, having looked him up, Jerry is as well.
Did Jerry pass away recently? Very recently.
A few years ago, yeah.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay,
I think,
right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything about him, to be honest. I looked him up just in case he was going to Twitter search me after.
Come for you.
Podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's from that. There's a period of Marvel around 2000, which you just know is awful. Like, all the covers are bad.
Yeah.
And so it's from that. But when I was asked to pick out a bad one, like, I started rooting around. But this was the one that I kept on thinking about because it's wound me up ever since I got it. And I got it, a few years ago from a back bin. It cost me about 50 pence or something. But so what it is we've got Domino in the foreground, wearing a very detailed outfit of some sort of a purple shirt with a bikini top. I assume it's a bikini top, might be a fancy bra.
Yeah.
There's just all this stuff on the design of her clothes. Ropes coming out the bottom of her shirt and stuff.
She's very much sort of like the year 2000 alt rock sort of female singer kind of vibe.
There is that. Mm. And
a lot of necklaces and stuff, isn't there?
I don't know what that rope thing is coming out from under her. It comes from out from under her top. Like a cross sits on the hip and then goes behind their back, or God knows.
There's loads of stuff, and like the proportions are slightly out, but that's fine. It's comics, so who cares? But I think looking at it, because she's so focused in the design, I think that the cover was just her stood there. I think that's what it was, or is it a pin-up or something that they decided to make into cover?
Yeah.
And then in the background, you've got some more of the members of X-Force just sort of stood there.
Looking in different directions.
Yeah. Looking in different directions, and they're all out of proportion to each other. So I know, having gone back into the comic, that there's a big chap with a big cheese block head in the background, which says,
What is that with his neck?
What's up with his neck? It's fucked. All over the place.
So that's James Proudstar. And then in front of him is, she's called Meltdown in the comic. I think it's Boom.
She was Boom Boom, yeah.
Yeah. But she's very small, and they've drawn her so like quickly enough that they have just like, if we just like put some lines in an order, it might look like a hand.
Yeah.
But so,
oh my god,
that's terrible.
So those two are like next to each other.
There's space for another boob on the right there, surely. There's like three boobs there suddenly. Yeah.
Those lines over her top are weird as well. I don't
get the outfit. Yeah. No. But at least she's got an outfit, because on the other side of the page we've got two more chaps. One of them's looking away, just like he's forgotten he's on the cover. He's like seen a squirrel or something. And then in front of him you've got, so that's Cannonball. It doesn't look anything at all like Cannonball.
The back right.
Yeah, it's back Cannonball. Right is Cannonball.
Oh my god.
What?
That's and really off model.
It's like some old redneck.
Yeah. It's and then in front of him is, I can't remember the name of the character. He's not a character that I recognise. I just read this one. But he's out of proportion. You can sort of forgive Boom Boom and Proudstar, whatever his name is, because he's supposed to be big and she's supposed to be normal size. But the other two, Cannonball is massive compared to the guy stood in front of him, and I can't figure out why. And they're both just wearing like shapeless coats or cloaks or something.
Yeah.
Like, they're just total afterthoughts. And then just in the corner, you can see the credits. So you've got Warren Ellis, which we're not allowed to talk about him anymore. Olivetti and Edgington. But Warren Ellis didn't actually do anything in this comic apart from write the story that it was based on.
So that
wound me up. and then over Domino's.
It's awful.
It's fucking just awful.
The biggest, most obnoxious signature I've ever seen in my life.
It looks like it's like an ornate picture on the wall.
Yeah.
Fuck knows what the background is in that picture, by the way. It looks like dirty green. Someone's just wiped their hand on the back of the, you know.
It definitely feels like that, like they've got this central character down, as that Wolverine uses for, and then just literally slapped in those figures in the background.
There must have been a barcode in the bottom left as well, because otherwise the spacing is all off.
It would have been arguably better just to have the single figure of Domino there and not none of the others. They really drag factor.
Yeah, and that's what makes me think it might have been just a pin-up, like some sort of commission or something, that they've just added these figures into the background really quickly.
I mean, that's quite a specific dress code for her and everything, isn't it? And she's kind of looking at the person who's bought that commission slightly filthily, isn't she? You know, so that's a sort of table at New York Comic Con. We're going, can you make just see a bit more of her boob when you're drawing it? You know, it's like that.
And then the corner box has X counter in. I don't know what that is. I don't know what X counter is. And then across the top, you've got Shockwave Part 2 of 4. I don't know what Shockwave is. And
but the E is a 3 upside down, Gareth. It's, it's so Y2K, man.
But it's just very hard to read that whole logo. It's all fucked up.
And then it's got the comics code box, but it's very, very small.
This is probably a commission by the bloke that directed the film Hackers.
But well, I suppose if the point of a cover is to make you want to buy the comic, this absolutely.
I'm just thinking in 1997, I had hair like that.
it doesn't work with like storytelling wise or pin up wise, because it doesn't work as a pin up and it doesn't tell you anything about a story.
Yeah, how is that anything to do with the Shockwave or Shockwave 3? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? How is it anything to do with that?
Yeah, and I don't know what Shockwave, even reading the comic, I'm not sure what Shockwave is as a storyline. Right. But so that's my bad cover.
And luckily they put Marvel.com there, so if you want to look up Marvel Comics online, you're lucky to know what it is there. Yeah.
Well chosen, Gareth.
But just the last thing I want to say is, like, as a teenager, like, say teenager 12, 13, I was just like starting to draw superheroes or draw anybody. I would put their hands in their pockets or their hands behind their back because it meant not having to draw hands. And they've done that on this cover as well.
There's no hands on that cover, is there?
Other than Boom Boom's hand, and that is a travesty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
If only they could have hands to look at as reference.
That's fine.
Be interesting to see what you think of this one, folks. All right, who's next? Dan.
Yeah, I've picked out this gem, Thunderstrike, Volume 1, Issue 5.
When I first looked at it, I thought, well, that doesn't look too... I see it now.
Ron Friends is the cover artist. And it's got Thunderstrike, and he's got the... I don't know what... It wasn't Mjolnir, was it, the hammer at the time?
It's a different... He had his own hammer, didn't he?
Yeah, his own little hammer. It's on the chain. And basically, this is the part of the massive overcorrection by Marvel that when Image came out, it's like, oh, fuck, now we've got to have all our heroes be edgy as fuck and have ponytails and... Do you know what I mean? All that kind of era. And this is like trying to capitalize on the edgy. And so you got Thunderstrike on the cover. He's got these shades on. He's got a camera somehow
attached to his head.
Attached to his head. That's just sort of just sitting there. And then he's got a hand which is maybe 2 to 3 times the size of what it should be, holding his hammer.
Where's it
hammer.
Coming out of?
I presume it's kind of folded behind him, but.
But it looks like it's coming out in front of his face.
It's really. It could. If you look at read it wrong, it feels like it's coming out of his lapel under. Yeah. Like in front of his face.
The more you look at it, the more it confuses you.
It's very odd. And then it's got like the kind of like these strap lines, like they're torn out, like it's really edgy. And it says, it's the 90s. They say society stinks. It does. They say politicians lie. They do. They say you can't trust anyone. Maybe. They say heroes are dead. Wrong. And it's just like, fucking hell.
What's that got to do with him wearing a camera on his head?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Like if he was going to come with a concept, right, that all this society is corrupt, or but you can trust Thunderstrike, he can sort you out. This cover doesn't say that at all. He could be looking at someone on the beach taking illicit photos. It's just such a bizarre cover. And in the background, you just got like a kind of a red and yellow gradient.
I'm just going to say this. POV porn. That's all I'm saying.
For Thunderstrike.
That's what he calls it.
Get ready for the Thunderstrike.
Oh, God.
But just so odd. Very odd. I just don't get the decisions behind it at all.
It's sort of like when comics got to that sort of, when they got past issue 4, especially in the 90s, like covers just became odd, didn't they, really? like the likes of like Forceworks. Do you remember Forceworks?
Yeah.
Things like that. You had the initial ones that had like a lot of effort put in, and then as it went on, they just sort of lost steam, didn't they, with a lot of them?
Yeah.
But at the same time, they were selling a lot of issues, so they didn't care.
I feel like they was, this is talking out of ignorance and massive amounts of conjecture, that like you said, they tried to kind of like see the image magic and then try to replicate what they was doing it, but without the magic. Do you know what I mean? And when I look back now,
the limited
image
magic,
And it's like, well, that's all dissipated now. We've got any image comic that I picked up in that time, which I thought, oh, these are really, like, there's a lot of energy to it. There's not there anymore. It's just like, oh, God, this is crap. Yeah. I've read a couple of issues like Brigade, it's not Bloodstrike, that one with the other team book, and read it, and I was like, this is shit. same with like the old Youngblood stuff. They like, he kind of sets up all these storylines and then that's it. You don't see it again. It's like, well, what happened to that? Oh, it just never mentioned it again. Like in Youngblood, they mention like Shaft has to kind of, he's got like a really religious diet program that he has to have to get in shape. And how it's kind of negatively affected him. No mention that again. Just on the back. Here's a few more team members joining up that look like Gambit.
X-Men.
Or yeah. X-Men.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Right.
I haven't listened to that Rob Liefeld podcast.
Yeah, I must listen to it. I've got them stacked up ready to listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't do too many on a long journey. Do you know what I mean? You end up crashing your car purposely.
I'm not sure
something,
if I kind of enjoy it or not, really, because...
Yeah,
yeah. It come up in the honourable mentions, but I find it deeply frustrating.
Yeah,
yeah.
I will go first before you, Tony, because I'm.
All right, baby cakes.
It's a short one for me. as I said, it's a bit. I went to Google to sort of try and find some covers that didn't necessarily work, rather than just sort of saying awful ones. And I picked an indie comic from the 90s, 96.
I've not seen this before.
This is Arachnus. Number four.
I had trouble working out what that said.
Thing is, I love that logo, but that's the death metaller in me. Fucking love it.
Right. You know,
I could have that on a t-shirt. I think the logo's the strongest thing. And looking at it, this was a very 90s comic book from the Ortiz brothers. And, you know, I haven't read any. I can't speak to what happens within the pages.
And not Jose Ortiz for anyone who writes in. We like that. Not this one. Yeah.
And this was a very 90s sort of, I don't know, he seemed to be doing, when Spider-Man had the metallic sort of, is the Iron Spider, wasn't it? Is that what he called?
I can't remember. I know what you mean. They had all the stupid covers
sort
for that.
Did that before that was cool. But it was a very 90s design, looking at all the other covers, very much inspired by the is it Awesome Studios? What was Liefeld Studios?
Extreme
Studios. That was it. Very much. Yeah. These are readers of Extreme Comics and want to make that. And do you know what? I get that. At this time, when I was drawing my own heroes and stuff, they looked like the Jim Lee stuff. They looked like the Rob Liefeld stuff. They did look like this. So fair play to these people to, you know, they were making comics.
They were selling a comic.
Yeah. Yeah. But this issue four, out of all of them, there was only four issues, so I don't know whether this killed it off. I hope not.
Yeah, whatever happened to Mushroom Comics, eh?
I know, yeah. But this is it's just some interesting things going on, really. There's a strange background, which is very 90s kind of.
It's another
AOL
one that just looks like, it's like someone's taken a picture of the screen in someone's bathroom after they've had a shower.
Yeah,
it's very odd.
Or it's like off a rave CD.
Yes.
Best IB for annual something.
You have the main character not actually wielding the character's most distinctive feature that I only knew he had from looking at the other covers. But you know, you see his like mask and it, you know, and he's got a bloody claw that he's and he's got huge biceps and he's holding one of the claws towards the reader. And he's holding this femme fatale that he's clearly... Has he defeated her? Were they friends?
I don't know if she's died and he's like, fuck, look at this blood.
It may be. She's very much Witchblade inspired.
Yeah, and you can't see any nipple. That's a problem for me.
That's a shame.
Where are those hands? Man. She's kind of got like one of those kind of like claw brassiere things to hold her breasts.
And his hand is holding... I think it's his hand that's behind.
And the small of her back.
And the small of her back. If that's the case, he's
got a very short arm on that side.
He's got a very short left arm, and he's got a very small left hand.
But because his hand looks the same as her, I'm going to say top, for want of a better word, I thought maybe he had eight arms and two of them were cupping her breasts.
That's the case is Arrakis, because it's like eight, he's spider-like.
Yeah.
Arrakis, the desert planet.
Exactly.
there's a lot to sort of look at. I mean, the muscles that's going on. And I mean, he's very muscular, but his pectoral muscles...
That's what you get when you merge with a spider.
Your tits retreat into your neck.
You get a bit of a big tummy, don't you?
But then he's kind of got that like stomach, which seems to be made of bumps.
It's come out in hives.
I would say, I did want to say, like the right hand, the right arm, is probably the best drawn bit. But the more I look at it, the more I'm finding issues with that as well. Like the shadows.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of arm.
And the way that his right...
I don't mind his head.
Yeah, that's probably the best bit, actually. And I would say that the way his right forearm has been sort of shaded, it looks like it's not as... Do you know what I mean? It's not as big.
His muscle goes the wrong way for his forearm. Yeah. If you look at the way his bicep goes, it's wrong for his forearm. Yeah. So his forearm actually starts midway up his bicep, doesn't it?
He's got. He could fit another face between the space between his eyes and his hairline.
Yeah,
there's a lot of forehead there.
Yeah. That looks sore.
He's got to fit
sore
in those spider eyes, isn't
he? Good point.
Yeah,
that does look sore. If someone's sticking spider eyes on your forehead, that's not easy.
But then, like, he's it kind of like they've got that kind of image undershadow on the woman's boobs. They've tried to work in like on that forearm. You know, kind of like he's got like a horizon line, and then you've got those kind of like graduating lines that there's always a kind of an underlight that's not really coming from anywhere.
Yeah.
And then she's got like a cybernetic arm, which is really tacked on, doesn't look like it could actually function.
And also, the injury doesn't replicate the amount of blood on him. So you see no wound whatsoever on her, and there's a bit of blood, but there's loads of blood in his hand.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what is. Has he done something to her? Is he saving her? Has he just plunged his hand into her heart because she's healed really quickly? It's just weird, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you were presented with the cover idea, it was like, right, this character's, his girlfriend, whatever, his teammate has died, and he's looking at the blood like, thinking, fucking hell, she's dead. There's got to be a better way to convey that image than what this setup is. A straight on shot.
This is
a real ambiguity to it.
It's not a cover image either. It just feels like
it's too far down the page, man. The page is a third dirty wall and crappy window.
That fucking we got the corner box like halfway, near enough halfway on the halfway mark of the cover. But could just shrink the logo a bit and get that in the top left.
To me, it looks like they put the logo on and then thought, oh shit, we're going to put this corner box there. Let's just slap it.
We need to fit the old mushroom on there, don't we? Get the mushroom in.
Looking at the other covers, issue 1 and issue 2 had the company logo in the bottom left. Issue 3 moved it up to the top left. And issue 4 was
better. It feels like it's saying we've got to have that logo in the fucking middle and that's it, end of. We go, what about the corner box? No, the logo's getting in the top and the middle.
Yeah.
And this commits the sin of the scrap of parchment with the signature floating on it.
It's with it being bottom right hand corner, it's not as egregious as previously, but it's still too eye catching, you know.
Yeah. It's an element that kind of it doesn't help.
It's a 90s signature. Very much a 90s signature.
Yeah.
But I thought this was a fun one to pick out. A good title. Stuff. Did you read this book? Was it any good? I mean, this could have been a great comic, so you know, we can't judge. Although we just did.
Just judge. But like I said, again, these are all personal opinions.
Yes, and also, you know, these might be a couple of artists who are absolutely smashing it now because of all the things they've learned. I mean, Jesus Christ, if I showed you anything I was doing around 1995, fucking hell.
You can rip that to shreds. Even 10 years ago, you can rip, or even last week, you can rip what to shreds. It's like...
So let us know what you think of this one. And I thought I'd leave Tony's for last.
Okay, so talk about the insides may be good. This one, the insides are just as shite, to be fair, because... I felt bad about ripping the cover, not having bought it, so I bought it on Comixology today, and like, yeah, it weren't good. You know that gif of the Team America being sick? It's a bit like that. So this is The Great Lakes Avengers issue 6, written by Zach Gorman. The cover is by Will Robson and Tamara Bonvillain. It's, for those that haven't seen it, it's The Great Lakes Avengers logo, and literally pasted on top of that is a long, long piece of text, which I genuinely forced myself to read, but now cannot be bothered to read again, of what is it, which is it Immortal Man? I think his name's Immortal Man, isn't he? He's talking to an artist who's down on her knees with a couple of pencils and a handbag and a pencil electric. Why is there an electric pencil sharpener? I don't know. But the saying, look, this is what I want you to draw on the cover. It's literally a joke with the funny bit taken out. It's not funny. It doesn't work. It's it comes across as complete. So there's no background whatsoever. It's just
it's like a gradient.
There's a bluey white gradient in the background with a mirror with Immortal Man saying, this is what you got to draw. He's not even very big on the page. He is directing an artist who sat on her knees, a woman of color with glasses on, and she's got a pencil, and she's about to, obviously the joke is she's about to draw that background.
And but, she's having a reaction of an exclamation mark, correct?
Yeah. And she's,
then
she's,
why the fuck is that that thought bubble there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is she look? Yeah. So what? Yeah, exactly. So her reply is an exclamation mark in the thought bubble, which is what, a third of the page up from where she sits, nowhere near her head. You wouldn't even think it's connected. You lose sight of it if you look at her close in on her. It's so far away from her head.
It's now, like the question, like, this speech bubble should be about 20 millimeters further down.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to overly blame Will Robson. I mean, everyone is actually, you know, accountable for their own things that they do. So he is accountable for this shit cover somewhat. However, I can only guess that there's some kind of editorial dictate that says this is what the cover. Yeah. But it's so I've got loads of questions, right? So Will is a white male who lives not far from me, right? Tamara Bonvillain is a white lady. So why is the artist on their knees a black woman? It seems somewhat rude. I don't know. I don't know if she's a black woman. She's a person, a woman of color. But I don't know why have they... But the worst thing is, okay, so right, so we've got this imaginary artist. That's fine. Okay, so I can see, right, we're going to do this cover and we're going to create this imaginary artist. That probably has something to do with the interiors. It doesn't. The interiors are nothing to do with this cover.
Huh.
Nothing at all. Also, okay, we're going to make this imaginary artist. She's only going to feature on the cover. She's going to be the one being told. And she's on her knees to Immortal Man, who's directing her. Seems a bit strange, but just to the right of her, you've got in a huge square, which looks like it's something to be part of the drawing and not a signature, is Will Robson's weird initials with 16 written next to it and Bonvillain written underneath it. As I glanced at it, I thought, oh, that's some kind of wall socket or something that's drawn into the picture.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's too big. It's just ridiculous.
The design and composition of this cover isn't very good. And we say that Will Robson did obviously the cover of El Marvo.
It's dynamite cover. It's absolutely brilliant. Fucking great.
Absolutely fucking brilliant. This is the other end of the spectrum. Was it?
Your eye is immediately drawn to his butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was this brought about from time, or like you say?
All the other covers like this, though, they're kind of like junky.
Yeah. There's another one which is a face squashed against the cover. It's like as if there's someone in the comic bag. And it's, you know, it's another, there's less lines in that cover than there are in this one.
I mean, maybe the joke would work better if the character was talking at the reader, like that he's standing on a blank cover.
That's totally what I think.
Maybe you'd have like the hands in shot of like getting ready to draw, and he's dictating to the artist, this is what you got to do.
But editorial, if it is their dictate, do you think one of them would have gone, can we move the thought balloon so it looks like it's actually coming out of the person's head?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think that's necessary, that exclamation mark in this. You should be able to read that on the artist. They should be exasperated, like,
yeah.
What the fuck? Like,
I'd actually missed it. I hadn't seen it until you said about.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Like that. Yeah. It isn't part of the flow of the dialogue, is it? It's almost something he's done.
The Blambot tutorial stuff, when it says the do's and don'ts of lettering, and it's absolutely fantastic guide for free. And if you go into the blambot.com website, they've got these guides to lettering and the beginner's guides. And one of the big sins it says is about doing blocks of text like this, because the readers have a bloody hard time engaging with it.
thing is, if it's a joke, make it readable so people can be bothered to read it. This one is not readable, you know.
I mean, hypothesizing, is that the right word? Now, the last bit of that speech bubble is, hurry up and get it done too, because we're running late this month. Late is in bold. Would this have been a sly in joke for, you know, for maybe deadlines that they've had?
Maybe the three people at Marvel who would get that joke.
Yeah. The thing that says no is because as you've said, other covers have tried to be sort of meta humor as well, which is a tricky thing in comics, I think.
Humor generally, I mean, in general terms, humor is difficult, but the one thing it needs to be is funny.
That's what they're aiming for, isn't it? Everyone goes on about Deadpool and the fourth fucking wall, and it only works so much.
Hey, God, you got to be really careful with it. I think it's very tricky.
It doesn't work for me, Deadpool anymore, in my opinion. It doesn't work for Deadpool anymore because it's been used so much that it's like, well, who cares?
I would have like cut down that text and say, right, we need like bullet points. Right, we need an army. We need the city on fire. We need Thanos in front of it, and we need it in 2 hours before the press. All good for you, like that. Something like that, really kind of like a lot punchier. What he's asking,
it's not just lots of text. You need the boom on the joke, don't you? It's like a layup with no boom. The last thing I'm going to mention is close up on his face. Right, I thought he had his tongue out.
Oh yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
What is that? What has happened to his mouth?
I don't know.
He has got his tongue out, hasn't he?
Has he got his tongue out?
Or is it just a big lip? I thought it was a big lip. I don't get it.
I don't get the choices on the cover. It's a bit of a misstep. But
yeah.
We've all had them.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's my one.
I'd like to think that was an editorial decision to sort of say this is what you're gonna do because I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't say. I've not worked for Marvel. I don't know how it works. I would like to think that because I'm not sure if an artist would say. I'm talking out my ass because I don't know Will that well.
It's just, I mean, editorial or Will or Tamara's fault, it's just not a very good cover. Yeah. I think you can't say it is a good cover. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a difficult one.
It's just, like I said, there's probably a lot of people that love these covers.
I mean, we're the readers, aren't we? And we're only coming at this as the point of view of a reader, not as an expert. As a reader, we are almost the expert into whether we would buy something because that's what a cover is for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when you do the comic book, the Wednesday comic book shelf browse, or if you do the digital browse, would any of these that we've talked about stand out to you? Well, you know, would any of the bad ones, the ones that we didn't like.
The Alpha one will.
Yeah. Would any of the ones that we didn't necessarily like appeal to you than the good ones we've liked?
If I saw that Great Lakes on the shelf and I saw it come out, I would look at it to see what it was. I don't think I'd read the joke and I'd be, oh, fuck, it's one of those, and just move on.
Do you know what I mean?
You know, part of me would be like, what's that? And then move past because there's nothing about that inspires me to pick the book up.
Oh, I sent you some screenshots of the interiors and
but we've got some honorable mentions that
we'll have to
I knew this was going to happen. We've been talking about this for ages. Now which one do we want to go first?
I just feel really sorry for that seal.
Let's talk about Alf then. I spotted all new 100% fresh Alf. Marvel Comics 48, no, issue 48, and it's Alf. Now, the joke they've tried to go for here is, it says, caution, do not buy if safety seal is missing. And there's a cartoon picture of Alf, the popular TV character at the time, holding onto a seal and saying, so hurry up already.
This just gets worse the more I look at it.
Yeah.
The problem with this is, it looks like, I'm not going to beat around the bush, it looks like Alf is raping a seal.
Yeah.
That's why I would buy it.
Which makes his speech bubble, so hurry up already, even more sinister.
Really creepy.
Yep. I mean, they do say at the bottom, no animals were injured during the making of this cover. But, you know, what can you say? It's haunting.
He's got a very firm grip.
He's got a grip. I mean, like, he's going for it.
I'd go on a date with Alf.
Yeah. Didn't he eat like Cats or Dogs? Or something. Yeah, Cats.
Did he?
I never used to watch Elf.
Did it scare you?
I was more of a Funky Brewster kind of man. Shout out to 80s kids, you won't know that otherwise.
Okay, the next honourable mention, and also very sinister, is Tony's pick, which is Superman's Action Comics. Which issue is this, Tony? This is number 457.
It's a famous one, this one. You'll it's the one it. That is yeah. much joked about. I did, when I did that talk with Martin Simmons and one of the Edington brothers at Nottingham, I put this one just in as a joke, just to catch all the adults in the audience. So that's not very good. Oh, not that one, move on. And like that, because it's Action Comics. In the background, you've got Superman taking his Clark Kent costume off, and it's got a kid lying on his front at the foreground with his crying like almost into the pillow.
Yeah,
laying on his front, saying, "Superman, my dying wish is to know your secret identity, and you can say you're Clark Kent. It's a lie." And he's looking away from Superman, and Superman is rather sinisterly getting undressed behind him.
Yeah, he's sort of face down, isn't he, on the pillow, like kind of.
Yeah,
it's a horrible, like
it's awful.
Trauma is about to happen. it's on a black background, like in a black void.
Yeah,
it just
it's definitely nighttime. He's in this kid's bedroom getting undressed. While he's laying down in his pyjamas, looking away and crying. Yeah, his editorial must have been down to pub this day to you know, just to pass this one and sign it off. Like, didn't anyone? What do you think?
Not
do you think it could be? You know, it's like that. Yeah, yeah.
And there's loads of little details which make it worse, but you can't expect. So the fact that he's put his glasses on top of his head, make it slightly worse. And the fact that he's hung his hat up on the bedstead, they all just make it slightly worse, but in a way that can't be explained.
So now I've got to go to work, and it's like, oh god, it's this. Where does the cape go when he's wearing his shirt? Does it go down the back of his trousers? Or was it all bunched up on his shirt?
It must be really hot, mustn't it? Doing that, We've got a couple more mentions.
Picked out a couple. DK3, that classic.
Yeah, I think they got fucking done in online because I saw that. I was like, oh, this is awful.
Yeah, book 4, DK3, The Master Race. How would you describe the cover of book 4?
It's got kind of like a strange looking kind of Wonder Woman kind of like hunched over, and she's carrying like a 40-year-old man baby on her back.
But someone's literally cut her head off and just stuck it to a wall next to her.
Yeah, it's just utterly bizarre. There's another one, Daredevil Man About Fear, issue 379. If it didn't have the Daredevil logo on, I don't think I could have identified this comic.
What's up with his eyebrows?
They kind of eyebrows go down to like where his cheeks start.
Yeah.
If that's Matt Murdock and he's got like, Wally? Is it? Is the.
Foggy, sorry,
like hollering at him, and it's just such an odd image.
I don't know a lot about Daredevil, but Foggy looks like Uncle Morty from Uncle Morty from With Nell and I.
Yeah,
he's not the owl, is he? Oh, Uncle Morty, I mean to have you, even if it be by burglary. That guy,
that's the one.
It could be that. I wonder if that is Leyland Owsley, owl man, because he's got flying. No, because I guess Daredevil is. Sight impaired.
But isn't Daredevil ginger? Daredevil's ginger.
Yeah, that's why I don't understand why he's got the black hair and the different costume.
And he can see, like he's looking at.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I think there was a part where Daredevil could see. Didn't they? They gave him back his vision for some. I don't know why you would undo that.
I have to say, I own this, and I've got zero memory of reading.
Okay, probably for the best.
It was written by Scott Lobdell, so it's bound to
that's
be
fine. Fine. Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about him either, are we?
No, we're not.
We was going to not do that honourable mention on that Liefeld one as a kind of sign off.
Yeah, yeah.
His work on the Heroes Reborn, Captain America.
God,
is it issue one?
No, it's not issue one. I think it's issue two. It's the one with the
The one with the weird floating head.
Yeah, the fold and the folded shield. Oh, there's so much joy to be found in that image.
Yeah.
And
we got your Superman one as well, aren't we?
Yes, you celebrate 800 issues of Superman in 2018. You want a striking image of Superman breaking free from kryptonite chains with a mighty 800 behind him, and I don't know what to say.
Honestly, where you put the comment, "Big Boy Jimmy Long Thighs," made me laugh out loud.
Because
it's almost hypnotic. I can't stop looking at it. It's weird.
It is like an image that seems to get longer the more you look at it.
Right, and go right. Go to you see because where his knob. You know, you see where his knob is, right? Yeah. Go up there. What's that shadowing in the middle?
I don't know.
It's his belly button.
Yeah. and certainly, is that a cape or is that just a, like a plastic bag that's blown past?
Yeah. Well, it's just come out the back of his pants, hasn't it?
He's been cramped in his pants.
Have you ever done that where you've drawn like on a flat surface, like on a table, and then like you've lifted it up and it's all fucking out of proportion because where you've been looking at it like a 45-degree angle... Mm-hmm. And you lift it up. Oh, fucking hell, Superman's like got massive thighs.
Yeah. Maybe that hasn't been that going on. Yeah, if you could take this image and just squash it a little bit in Photoshop, just ever so, it would probably be spot on. But it's just, you know, and it's not, this isn't one of those, oh my God, this is awful, awful covers. I just looked at it and then I just kept looking at it. It's hypnotic, folks, so we'll put it in there. We'll put it online.
What's he fucking
all.
Standing on as well? Like a load of ash or something.
Coal. Like coal.
It does have the signature box as well.
Mm. And this is
Tony Daniel.
Tony Daniel.
I mean, the coal, we've sort of mentioned Liefeld, it just looks like if you put something in front of the feet, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So let us know what you think about all of that. God, that was good to get off the chest, isn't it? We talked about it. I mean, this always happens when we have a thing like this. We just have too much fun.
Yep.
Yeah. And now,
So I think you should try one time at doing small press, and
that'd go down really well. That's all bad.
Just do small press. Yeah, and we won't do any good ones, just bad ones. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah. So, has your comic got a terrible cover? Then let us know.
Yeah, it has.
Mine has.
No, and that's a wonderful segue. Because let's talk about your work briefly, Gareth. Because you've been since we spoke to you last, you have been churning out work all the time, like exhibition. I mean, obviously at this time we're all at home in some way, shape or form, but you're still putting work out, man. And I see your Instagram and like your Twitter feed and stuff, and you're still busy at it.
Yeah, so you're right, man, because you have like a drama.
Me?
Around work.
Yeah, memory card drama.
Oh yeah, I've lost all of my book.
Oh mate, I see everyone like suddenly got gut ache when they saw that. Like, oh God.
And this was Thunders, the recent one that we talked about on the show, isn't it?
Yeah, so Thunders is part of like a longer short story collection that I'm putting together called Explosive Sweet Freezer Razors. And I just like dedicated an entire memory stick to that and just managed to wipe it by accident. Photoshop crashed and just the whole memory stick got wiped. So I mean, I've still got all the like physical papers, and I had most of it backed up. So I think Nothing, which was the one I put out earlier this year, I think that's gone, and so is Thunders. So the copies that I sold of Thunders, they're the only ones now.
Do you not have a copy for yourself?
Oh yeah, I've got. There's only one. I'd made a PDF just to share with Eric Blagsfed, who Nick words from.
Yeah.
I made a PDF to share with him, but it's nowhere near good enough for print. It's barely good enough for screen.
But he's a made up person, isn't he?
He's not.
Okay, I'll keep accusing you of that.
You've accused me of that so much that now I'm wondering if he is.
So you don't have a printed copy for yourself then?
I do have a copy from, because I print at home, like prints go wrong. So I've made sort of a Frankenstein copy, which is twice as long as all the others, but it's made up of bits which have gone wrong. So there's blank pages and there's upside
down. So would you need, like, if one of our lovely listeners has a copy?
Oh, no. I can put it back together again. So okay. I've got the PDF, okay. I've got that, and I can, and there's, yeah, it's fine. And in some ways, like, part of Thunders as getting it out was just like I was sort of like in a, I hadn't done anything useful for a while, and my family had gone away for 2 weeks, and I was just like, the first week I just played PlayStation. I'd worked, and then at 6 o'clock I just start playing PlayStation until 2 o'clock in the morning, and that's what I did for a week.
That's perfect. Yeah. I have to say though, knowing what you're like for playing tricks on people in regards to format and content, this isn't a trick you're playing on us, is it?
In what sense? What, losing the files?
Pretending it's lost files, and then, we found the lost tapes in another couple of years. You'll be doing a fleeked version. No, okay, right, good.
No, it's not. Because okay. The other thing is that although I'd meant it to just be, like, Explosive Sweet Tree Razors. My I'm doing a page for Tales from the Quarantine. That massive.
Oh yeah,
That was on there. So luckily, I sent a high res version. They asked for an extra high res version, which so I'm going to have to reconstruct that as well. So yeah, it's just. I mean, part of me was like, "Oh, good, that's lost now." So those copies that went out, they're extra secret because that was the that is supposed to be just between me and whoever until they all got collected. So, yes.
Is there no way of getting the stuff back off the drive? Like
somebody I work with is good at that stuff. So I'm going to send him the drive and see if he can fish it all back out again. But you know, it's just that thing, in it.
It will probably inspire you to put something in one of your future books, no doubt. Some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back up now.
I would say, listener, back up your work because your thing is all fine and gravy, and then one day your hard drive doesn't fire up. It's like, oh, I've got all my comics on there. That's great.
Do you know what? Yeah. It's a thing for the moment because we in the university, we have loads of our documents all on the Teams documents bit.
Yeah.
And something will happen and that'll go, and we go, oh my God, that took me weeks to write that. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because like, that's why I stopped trusting digital files because, like, working from home, I had need to log into the company portal. And if for some reason that's not working, I can't get the files I need for the day. So that's why I started saving everything onto a pen drive. And that went wrong as well. So, yeah.
So they've locked all our pen drives. Like, you can't use USB slots because they're concerned about you walking off with loads of company data.
Yeah.
They can they can trace anything that comes off the machine, but you can't stick a USB in and then say, right, download all the financials. We can't get access to that anyway, but they're trying to damage limitation by not doing the USBs.
Yeah, and also because I mean, this is really great comics chat, but because of the GDPR, that you don't want to have someone's personal details saved onto something that can be removed and lost. And yeah, so yeah.
There we go.
Good.
So otherwise, creatively, how are you doing at the moment?
Good. Yeah. So I've got, I'm part of an arts group called Youngblood Initiative, and every year I do a showcase for them. So I've got that coming up.
Is that doing large paintings of Rob Liefeld's Youngblood comics? Is that what
you could do a comic of Rob Liefeld's feet. Time. Okay, yeah.
Conceptually, that would be incredible.
Take a page of Youngblood, but do it in your style and see if you can do it better.
Well, I don't know. It would be different. But then, I'm not going to do that. It's different this year because of coronavirus and stuff, and because the group is spread out internationally. It used to be just three hubs, and each hub in a city would do a showcase. But this time, the London hub has a space for 3 weeks, and each of those weeks is a different pair of artists in that space.
Right.
So I'm gonna be in there for the week. But
Where's that gonna be, man?
It is at, I've got the address, I've actually written it down in preparation. 48 Aberfeldy Street, E14ONU. But also it's right next door to a pub called the Tommy Flowers. So if you Google Tommy Flowers, it's next door to that.
Okay.
But the idea of this showcase is about activism, because obviously there's a lot going on in the world, and the organizers of the group were just like, as artists, do we do enough to make the world a better place? So that was the challenge to all of us as a group. And I honestly don't know. So I've called the group, my show, I Don't Know. And I'm drawing some animals for it, and I don't know why. And I am doing some abstract paintings, even though I don't know how to do it. So it's just, yeah. And I'm going to be there for a week. I don't know what I'm going to do there while I'm there for the week. And it's because I spend my life like winging it, and this is like the ultimate artistic version of winging it. So that's that. And then I've got some other stuff. It just like everything sort of piles up. It felt like I hadn't done anything all year, and now I've got a list of stuff that I need to promote all the same time. So I don't know if you seen the Colossive Cartographies that have been put out recently.
I don't think I have. No.
So Tom Murphy, who he used to be a writer for Broken Frontier, he still is a bit.
Yeah, I know Tom. Yeah, he's a nice guy. Yeah,
he's really nice. Yeah, and he's started Colossive Press, which is like his little zine press.
Oh, I do know it. Sorry, man. Yeah.
And so he's done a series of what he calls collusive cartographies, and it's a map fold. So instead of having a zine which is like stapled in the middle and you read it like a little book or whatever, it's an A6 thing, and then when you fold it out, it folds out to an A4 sheet just with one fold. It's really clever. And so he invited like just people he liked their work. So there's, and loads of us have done them. So there's me, Lucy Sullivan, Yestin Pettigrew, Douglas Noble, Sean Azapardi, there's 12 of us so far. Oh, Peony Gent, she's done one. Peony Gent, sorry. So that's coming out. And what else have we got? I've got a page in Tales in the Quarantine. Oh, and also the last thing to plug is I was invited to contribute to a really... There's like a certain subset of the art world, which is like middle-aged men who can't get their work out anywhere else because it's too weird.
Here we go.
These anthology books. So I was invited to just provide something for that. So it's called... Octo Emanations. It's the eighth in the Emanations series, and so I've got a 6-page strip in that, which is also part of Explosive Sweet Freezer Razors. So it's a short story, but is actually weirder than the other ones I've put out so far.
Oh, nice. Have you got the site for that? The address for that?
It's just on Amazon.
Oh, okay,
so it's on print on demand. So Octo Emanations, and okay. it's a big chunk of book. Some of it, a lot of it's prose, and then I think I'm the only comic in there. And I've done some spot illustrations as well. So that should be good. Cool. But in terms of my other work, what we've been talking about is Explosive Sweet Freezer Razors, right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to do a 17 part short story collection. There's all sorts, but I've got about
17,
halfway.
17, bloody hell.
Yeah, and I realize that some of them are quite long. So the one that I was working on before everything crashed, called Moon Puke, is 32 pages.
I've seen them live, they were good.
That was 32 pages itself, just as a short story. I'm going to have to, if I'm going to get it finished, I'm going to have to just like start cutting down the number of pages and stuff.
What deadlines have you set for yourself in terms of that, like a project like that?
Well, I started it last year. So I started it sort of by accident for, what was the thing that Joe Stone put together? Hackney. Was it Hackney?
Oh, Hackney Zine Fair, yeah.
Yeah. So the first two parts I did for that, and then did another one for Thought Bubble. And then I did another few here and there, and then did nothing just to get something on Comixology, because I wanted just like some digital comics. So I did nothing, and then did Thunders just because I had the pages lying around and I wanted to get something out quickly. So
are we allowed to say, I know we said it on the Drink and Draw, but are we allowed to say the inspiration for Thunders? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it comes back to something we were talking about a minute ago, doesn't it?
It does actually. Yeah. So I started it as part of a live demonstration of like my comics process. And I wanted to just do it. What I used to do, I don't do it as much anymore, is to take a page layout from a different comic and then redraw it abstract.
Yeah.
And so for the demonstration, I just happened to have a copy of Thunderstrike 2 next to me, so just flick through and see what I found.
I love that, just casually in your front room. Thunderstrike 2. Yeah.
And when you're talking about the covers of it, like I bought it because it's only got Juggernaut on it, so I thought it was a Juggernaut comic. I didn't know what it was. And then when I opened it, it's like this long-haired Thor who's worried about getting his kid to school or whatever.
Blue collar Thor.
I just did that, and then I liked that enough that I did a bunch more. But then when I actually came to put there's 12 pages of it. The actual original Thunderstrike comic is longer, and then I rearranged them into what felt like a sequential pattern of pages, so that they're out of order from each other. But the actual the panel layouts are taken from that. So, and that's what's called Thunders as well. The actual title doesn't have anything at all to do with anything that happens in the comic.
Is that a thing that you do though? I mean, there's a lot of the titles are similar. Moon Puke. I mean, Moon Puke, is that just two words you thought worked well together and it just was funny, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely it. Those two words actually appear in Thunders, and they appear in A Hill to Cry Home. So there's just something that Eric had done as part of his poetry. Like, he does these like concrete poetry things where he just pairs words up together. They don't make sense, but they sort of sound and feel nice together. And so when I was putting Thunders together, I saw just Moon Puke. I was like, I've got, that's just the name of my next comic. I don't know what the next comic is. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know what it's about.
But they strangely work. And the randomness of adjoining these two words still evokes an image in my head. Moon puke. Still something. When Vince said, I saw them live, I still sort of think they were a sort of 1996 laddish band.
Yeah.
You know, who toured with the Happy Mondays. So there's a bit of that going on there. Do you know what I mean? Sort of.
Yeah. So I've been using the titles more as like a sense of it rather than description. So like Hill to Cry Home is about ghosts and it doesn't have anything about homes or hills in it or crying. Right. It's just about someone having a bath and then meeting ghosts in the bath.
We do like to think in the bath a lot, don't we? I love the bath for thinking about stuff. Yeah.
Well, after Dan did the review last week of Thunders,
yeah,
about how, and you mentioned how it's like little bits of my life that I just like add up and make weird, and I realised that a lot of Exposure Street Freeze Razor is just me doing something really normal and then making it unnecessarily weird. So Hill to Cry Home is me having a weird bath. Thunders is me having a weird haircut. Nothing was me just being in a really horrible mood over New Year's and then pretending that I was 65 other people. And then Moon Puke was going to be about I really like empty car parks, and it was just going to be about someone obsessed with empty car parks. That's what the whole story was going to be about, that.
I love an empty car park because you can never decide where to park, can you?
There is that, yeah. But it's like they're like empty schools. You know, if you go to a school and it's empty, it's a bit spooky.
What, like a nighttime break in sort of thing, you mean?
There's just something like weird about them, and I couldn't put my finger on it, so I decided to just write a story about someone obsessing about them. And then Bullwise, which is in Octo Emanations, mentioned earlier, it's just about me. I just got this image in my head, and I don't know where it came from, of a bull in a metal corridor. And so the whole comic is me trying to describe that. It's just, as I sent it in, I was like, this is going to get rejected. It's just been really weird. But no, it went straight in. It fit.
Good stuff, man.
It fit loads of other people's work in there. And I'm just really enjoying doing stuff like that. Yeah.
You've got a bunch of your stuff on Comic House.
Yeah. And so Petrichor's up there as well, which is it's probably my successful comic.
It's most well known, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And people have reacted really well. They don't come away from it and go, well, that's weird. Why has he done that? They sort of
That's fine, man. Have you seen some of the other shit on Comic House? Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
I think if this is the first time people have heard me and they want to go and read something, I'd suggest they read Petrichor on Comic House, because that's probably, it's weird, but it's also like, it's relatable, I think. So,
and yeah, you do your books very much, you know, Petrichor is a good jumping on point, but you know, you think about them afterwards and they hit you in ways that you don't imagine. I think that's one of the you got secret weapons that you're not telling anyone about, Gareth, because there's work, and you know how many times of myself, Dan, Tony, whatever, we might have said, well, you know, this might not have been something that I thought I would have liked, and then you read it and think, oh my god, I love this, and once people get on board with your work, there's no turning back. We just want everything that you churn out now, so just keep making them.
That's really nice to hear. Yeah, well, because I think I can't remember where I said it recently, but for so long, like, my metric of success as a comics creator was how much money I was making back from it. Like, that was like a really important metric for it. Mm. And then when that UK Comics Creators Survey came out, I know that everybody knew about it, and I think in certain ways it's quite clicky in itself. But the fact that showed that nobody was making money from comics was really freeing for me. It was after I read that I was able to just go off and make Thunders.
I had a conversation with a husband and wife team who do a bit of comics recently, and they gave me that look. Do you sell that many? And I said, well, you know, I mean, we might make enough to have a bite to eat at the end of the day, and that's it. And they went, a few. Yeah. We just thought everyone was making millions of pounds. You see certain people online blagging about how much they sell, and I don't believe them. Yeah. You know what I mean, there's that going on, isn't there?
Yeah.
And like, and all of these successful Kickstarters are wonderful and they're fantastic, and it means that more books are coming out. But they're also Kickstarters. They're to fund a particular book, which is going to the particular people who have ordered from that Kickstarter. So it's not a shelf. Kickstarter isn't so much like a shelf where the general public can just walk in. Do you know what I mean? It's not like a conversion.
Yeah. The margin on Kickstarters. We're not greedy, are we? Do you know what I mean? And people can tell if you're greedy. So you may sell to 500 people, but it's still 500 books you've got to make that you've budgeted. You're probably only making 50p a book, if that. And then you've got to factor in, you know, different things you're doing as the pledges get bigger and bigger. Then you've got to factor in postage. Then you've got, oh no, this print's gone wrong, or we haven't had the envelopes. Oh, we need comic bags. You know, this sort of thing. Loads of things that go on.
You made a miscalculation and not calculated something like, oh, fuck, comic bags, or oh, we didn't charge enough for postage because it's a little bit heavier. That's your profits fucking gone.
Even if you got the maths right, and it's a, you know, there's what, $2,000, you've made $2,000 on your Kickstarter, I can bet your life there'll be 50 quid over, and that's it.
And also, if you're a writer, you've got to pay the person that you've to get to draw it as
the
well
production
that,
cost yeah
oh mate
yeah,
so tell me about it yeah
as
yeah
well, so
yeah I'm hoping to make money in maybe sort of 2033 something like that, you know, from my comics.
I've had like 4 weeks solid work and I've managed to make 50 quid out of it, so that's all right.
I spent every night, I went to bed stressing about it and woke up to check to see if I got any pledges in the morning. Like the Kickstarter I did for 683 was the most stressful thing I've ever done in my life.
People out there, go and buy his book so he can afford that yacht that he's been living on for the last 2 months.
He can afford a haircut and not buy his wife. There you go.
Oh dear, yes, and I know a lot of our listeners are already converts to Gareth, but if this is the first time, we definitely recommend it. You definitely need to check out Gareth's work.
Yeah, it's always a highlight. Always try and get in quickly because your books aren't huge print runs, are they? Sometimes, so I know Thunders was only 10, wasn't it? I think
Thunders, I've sold 21 copies, and I made 22 because obviously yours got ruined in the rain. So
thank you, man.
I was actually like all the copies I sold of Thunders because I was trying to disguise the fact that I sold 20 of them. So
nice.
And you also sent me quite a saucy postcard, which is nice.
Well, as I said on the back of it, I knew that you were the only person who I couldn't fondle.
Yeah, there's a few people at Gosh I can see raising an eyebrow.
Anyway, we're getting to that stage of the show. Now, do we have any shout-outs, gents, quickly?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got a couple. So Chris Wild Goose and Laura Trinder came round my office this week. Good to see them. Just to Laura had just her book, The Midnight Howl, which is the second book to The Midnight Hour, had just come out. So it's well worth getting. I know it's not a comic, but there are illustrations in it. And Laura is a friend of ours, and you should support her work. Awesome. And she's a great creator with a fancy new haircut. The haircut's looking good.
Excellent.
And then someone wrote into the podcast, David Metcalf. He's a new listener. He has a Kickstarter on the bubble at the moment, Being a Girl, and it's the Collected Milton Stories, a collection of strips about being a young man coming to terms with being a cross-dresser. It's created by Will Brooker, Paul Barlow, and David Metcalf Carr. So go and have a look at that. And thanks for being a new listener, David. There you go.
Welcome to the show. You should have mentioned at the start, and we really name-dropped him all the way through. Did your mate absolutely listen again? Was it Chris?
I haven't mentioned it to him yet. I must mention it to him.
Hi, Chris. You still listening?
Hi, Chris. We love you.
Hi, Chris. We still love you. Thanks for listening. Yep. Please don't get me banned off that Slack that I enjoy being on.
My shout out is for a comic called The S Factor, hitting Comixology this Wednesday, September 9th. Written by Samuel George London, art by Chris Panda. And the synopsis is, an underappreciated sidekick called Grey Fox decides to rebrand himself for a new dating reality TV show for superheroes called The S Factor, where 12 female contestants fight for his affection. Meanwhile, his former superior, Dark Fox, is bewildered as to why he would put himself in such a vulnerable position. The artwork and character design by Chris in this is absolutely gorgeous. I'd really recommend checking it out. And as you know, I've worked with Sam before. He's done Project Hoax. And we've got a Kickstarter coming up for the Comic Scene Annual, which has got another week or so left to run. So check that one out.
Which you're in as well, aren't you?
I'm in that. We're doing a Project Hoax prequel called Midnight Monster Hunter.
Cool. Nice one.
Check
that out.
So from comic books you have to check out to all comic books you need to check out, because we're going to recommend something to you now. Gareth, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
I did have two, but I realized that because I've talked for so long, I'll just cut out one of them. I just want to talk about Henry and Stanley Miller, and I don't know if they've
yes, I know them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did the one about a marathon bar or a Snickers bar that you did a story about. That
oh, Star Bar, Darren. Yeah.
That's it, Star Bar. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
His dad's a bit of an actor, isn't he? You see him in, he's always in, like, he plays, like, the lawyer in, you know, sort of TV series and stuff like that.
Yeah. On his, Henry is at Millertown 1 on Twitter, and Stan is Pigeon Flakes. Pigeon spelt with a D, PIDGEON Flakes. But if you go to Henry's Twitter account, there's like an advert he did where he gets hypnotized to be a snake. You just see him trying to live his life as a snake. It's really good. But yeah, they're father and son make comics, and it's sort of like I really, really like Stan stuff. And it's almost creepy because I'm 40 now and Stan is just taking his A-levels, but he's always the creator that I like. If he's at a show, I'm like, oh God, I hope he's got something new because I really, really like his stuff.
It comes creepy and, Uncle Gareth.
Yeah, I know. It feels terrible.
In his Superman jacket.
With my glasses on my head, yeah. but yeah, they both do really nice work. They've got a particular style. You can tell that they sort of work together on their stuff. But he's done one of my favorite ever comics, which is called Yeast, which is about a planet where everyone lives inside craters and they all worship nuts. And then there's three chaps and they go to worship their nut and then someone steals it. So it's like their quest to find out how to get their nut back from this massive blobby monster which has got it. And it's so weird and it doesn't make any sense, but it's so funny at the same time. And he did another comic called The Jibs, which is like every week he'd put four panels and it's just about one of them's got a sword and he cuts a bee in half. And the two halves become two bees. And so that's really interesting. But then, so the other one takes a sword and like chops a butterfly in half and kills it. And they're just like, they're sort of having, they do a few, yeah. So that's Stan Miller is brilliant. And then Henry. And so I've given their Twitters. And then millertown.co.uk is their website. So you can go and buy their stuff from there.
I see them at LCAF and stuff like that. They're sort of South London creators, aren't they, I think? Is that right?
Yeah, they are, yeah. So they ran Catford Comics.
Ah, yes, yeah.
Because they're from that area. And so Henry is an actor, an artist, and then Stanley is at school, as I said, which is amazing. And if you go to Stanley's Instagram, you can see where the work he's doing at the moment. Like, he does portraiture work in paint, and he does animations and stuff. And they're just incredible. He's just so talented. I honestly think like he's somebody to keep an eye on for the future because I think he's going to be someone really, really special to look out for. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. I put my Star Bar comic. I hide it away, ready to make millions out of it. Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, that's such a Darren. So if you're looking for it, it's called Darren. It's just about
right. Someone, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Right.
Cool. Okay,
that's a good one. Who would like to go next?
D-Man, do you want to go?
Yeah, okay, next. My comic I'm going to recommend is Bad Dreams by George Alexopoulos. I came across this creator on Twitter, and he's got quite a large following, and I thought, I'll try out one of his comics. And I really enjoyed it. He says you can give it away for free and let anyone read it, but if you go to his Etsy shop, he's only selling it for £1.90. For the digital edition. I don't really think you can go too wrong for buying a comic for that much.
No.
And then it's instant delivery. As soon as you buy it, it's in your inbox and away you go. So it's a kind of like, I'd imagine it's kind of like a Regency drama, kind of Pride and Prejudice kind of era, but it's set in a kind of a fantasy land. And it focuses on a young man called Sebastian. He comes home from the front lines of some war that's been waged in like a foreign land. And he's come back to his family estate in a place called Norland. And by all accounts, like the family estate's overgrown and untended. You don't know what's happened to his family. But it opens up and he's like at this big social occasion, which is like a bit of a ball. And there's like all the figures from society there. And he gets pressed by this Lord and Lady Dufresne to kind of like, look, our daughters are here. You can kind of hook up. And he's obviously quite the bachelor, but he's completely out of his element. He doesn't want to be there. And he makes off towards his homestead. And before he does so, he's warned by the lord of the manor that you shouldn't be traveling alone at night because there's like reports of a monster out, and they're very vague, but like it's been attacking like farmsteads, attacking livestock. And you get flashbacks from Sebastian Stan's when he's in the war, and it's taken a toll on him, and he goes on his own. And I won't spoil too much of the story, but essentially he meets Elizabeth, who's a former lover of his and now a widow, and the two of them, they have a lack of regard for like society's norms and how you should behave, and they start having a relationship and fall in love, but it starts to go quite badly wrong, and there's like a kind of a dark malignant entity that sort of begins to cast a shadow over the pair, and that's where the story goes. And I'm eagerly awaiting a second part, but honestly I can't really do it justice. I think you have to read it. George's style is very sort of manga anime. It's kind of like kind of a painterly effect, but if you kind of like is it manga, isn't it? Not anime. Anime is the animated stuff, or I never get that right.
Yeah, anime is animated. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's lots of sort of like silhouettes and hints at backgrounds, and it's just, I really enjoyed it. I kind of, it's got a real kind of gothic atmosphere that looms large throughout the comic, and it's just really well done. It's kind of like someone who really knows their craft. There is a fair amount of nudity in the comic. And it's funny, I looked at the Etsy and there, someone says, that's a great comic, but I wish you'd warned me about the nudity. And I was like, well, I guess some people need that warning. But it's totally fitting with the tone, and it's a really good read. I'd like to see the second issue of that. So check that one out. You can, we'll put the show notes, the link to the Etsy store, because it's a bit of a, I can't really read it out on, online. But if you go to his Twitter account, it's at gprime85. He's got his links there.
Nice. Cool. Nice. My one is a Kickstarter reward that was a few years in the making.
Oh.
It's a lovely little book. It was actually backed in, I think, 2016.
What?
Yeah, and it took a few years to get here. But those were years where the creator was in constant contact on the comments and stuff. And it was one where I thought, do you know what I mean? It's on its way. I'm just going to be patient. And when it arrives, it will be what it will be. This is Grenade by Will Kirkby, which you might have seen a few people posting. I think I posted a picture of me showing off its gorgeous cover. It's actually got probably my cover of the year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The book itself. Because it's a cyberpunk noir tale following a sort of a UN weapons inspector as they try to police the black markets of Hong Kong. There are sort of fantasy elements, there's sci-fi elements. You know, imagine a Blade Runner and Ghost in the Shell just being mashed together with fantastical elements, and that's the sort of world of Grenade. It's a one and done sort of story. And it took a few years to get here. You look at the pages and think, Jesus Christ, every page is fucking rammed with detail. Will, a lot of people may have seen Will's work on Twitter. He's at Chamonkey, I think you might have seen that name about a bit. He's a creator from Sheffield. And this is a book that, cover to cover, is just beautiful from design to layout. The story is very, it's a black and white book, and this no,
I'm going through your Twitter now trying to find this cover, and it's just, you put a video up of a lady trying to chop a crab in half. I don't know what it's about.
Oh yeah, that's amazing. That's nothing to do with this book.
Okay.
And I haven't, that's just me retweeting something that I thought, what the fuck. but Grenade itself has got a lovely sort of gold foil on the cover as well. And because of the nature of it, it looks like a grenade, but it's made up of like pockets and sort of like, it looks almost like a backpack with loads of details, like there's a knife in its sheath and stuff. But the way it's sort of, and it's got like a grenade sort of pin at the top. It's just beautiful. I'd love that as a print on itself. I could just stare at that cover for ages. And the book itself, like page to page, is just absolutely just stacked with detail. It is a gorgeous looking book. And there's plenty of back matter as well. There are chapters that are split up, and Will on the I will say on the Kickstarter campaign, he was releasing sort of, it was done in chapters, so he was releasing chapters to people to read. Once they were done, you could read them. I didn't read any of this because I wanted to read it. That was one of the reasons I knew that the book was coming. The book was still being made, but I didn't. I kind of wanted to read the book. You know the shelf porn, as it were.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are intermissions in between all the chapters, which are, you know, there's a chapter all about it, just a double page splash about an assault rifle. There's one about like sort of different sort of villains that are in the world, and it's just stunning, absolutely stunning. I mean, narratively, there are, I mean, there's so much going on, and there's so much detail. It does feel like, you know, when you watch like Ghost in the Shell for the first time, and you're looking at it thinking, God, there's so much detail. Never mind the figures, but everything in the background. Do you know what I mean? There's just so much detail going on. It does, every page takes you a little while to get used to, because he's just put so much on the page. And I lost myself a couple of times narratively. There's lots of interesting things going on, like the main character, King, is a fantastical sort of creature. It doesn't talk about like what so much what she is and what these characters are, but you're already in this world. You're dropped into a world. There's no sort of like, this is a world of ghosts and blah blah blah. It literally just drops you into an urban sort of cyberpunk setting, and just run with it. You just go with it. You know, if you're used to these sort of tropes that they have in their sort of stories, then it's totally up your street. Will's got such a style to him that is instantly recognisable. It's one of those, the world is super serious, but there's a slightly sort of anime manga look to the, I don't want to say cartoonish, but you know what I mean. There's a real style to his figure, his characters' faces and stuff, and I love it. I mean, he's also a designer as well. He designs the patches, the magazine covers. There's playing cards. There's creatures. There's, you know, this character used to be part of a squad called the Dirty Rats, who most of her squad are dead now, and she's seeing their ghosts. That's another story plot line as well. But even that logo is just, there's so many things that you could have on a t-shirt, or it's aesthetically, it's immensely pleasing. But there's a lot to think about. I'm still pondering this book, because there's lots of themes about sort of loss and mourning and like a certain addiction. There's one guy in it that her partner at the time, whenever she sees him, he's always reading porn on his screen, and he says,
"What?
I have to read it." But whenever she looks at it, she looks over, she's got like cybernetic implants which have blacked out the dirty sections which you can see on the page, so you're sort of seeing her vision. And he says that he has to read it because it's medically he's got some sort of condition where he has to read it. And I wonder what sort of condition that is, that you have to read porn. Have you got that, Tony?
I think I blame Comicsgate.
But no, this is great. I mean, obviously, follow him on Twitter. I literally, there's no sort of, there's no real sort of links in the book itself to his website and stuff. And it's a little sort of an A5 sort of book, just slightly bigger than A5. It's good shelf porn, but I'm not quite sure where you would get copies for it, because I know he's currently shipping them all out to the people that got the Kickstarter. He's in that sort of like, right, let's deliver.
Is he a UK creator?
Yeah, he's from Sheffield.
Oh, sorry, I missed that. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, somebody has to be, don't they?
Yeah. But from this, I'm looking forward to, I've seen a lot of his prints and stuff, and they're gorgeous sort of work. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next. I know this was a 100 plus page book, so it's quite a task to do in itself. So, but I got the book, so it
hooray!
It took a while, but it's,
I bet that's a weight off his mind.
Yeah, I think it is. Now he's on that stage of like, the books are in people's hands, and people are saying, "Oh, I love the book," and you know, I've got it and received it. He's probably thinking, "Oh, thank God, I can."
You know that sort of feeling of exhilaration and happiness that it must be shooting through his body at this very moment. Yeah. Can he just like write a letter to Tim Truman and just communicate how good that feels, and then he can maybe get on with the fucking book I spent £50 on two and a half years ago.
Will, just send him an email, will you? Right, so that's one. Tony, sign us off.
Yeah, so I've had a busy week, as you well know. I've been busy stalking Jay McDonald and reading FemForce. The two things are pretty probably standard. Connected. Mm. Yeah. So I got through the Kickstarter. Mine's a Kickstarter as well. So it's I've got a horse in this race, so excuse me for being in love with this artist's work because I think he's great. I got Keir Wordsmith issue 2 through, written by Dave West, art by Ian Ashcroft, published by Accent UK. Logo designed by Ian Ashcroft, book design done by our old mucker, Andy Bloor. And the editor is Gemma West, who I'm guessing is Dave's wife or sister, I'm guessing. Right, you know. Mm. Format-wise, it's slightly smaller than a US comic, but it's larger than A5, if that can put it in your mind. It's got a great action wraparound cover, which I showed you guys earlier. I mean, Ian's a class act, isn't he? We all know Ian's art is just spot on. I've got slight criticism of the logo on the cover. It's slightly overshadowed. It's in black ink, and it looks like it's got the effect of being look like an oldie worldy written with a quill pen kind of effect to it. But it's slightly we can't see it. Actually, part of it's got a character over the top of it and stuff. I think possibly that's the only fault in it. But otherwise, it's representative wise, it represents what's going on in the story. It shows you a number of aspects. It teases what the story is going to be about and some of the great designs that Ian's done. It's really lovely, a really lovely comic. It brings back for me nostalgia for those old great days of Vertigo. I'll be honest. I think Ian would have fitted right in with the Vertigo crowd back in the days of the Books of Magic and that sort of thing. It's about Kia lives in a world that's very different from our own. It's a world of magic and warring tribes and magicians and thieves and rooftops and country homes and magical schools and strange, weird, creatures that are hybrid. So her cat is a hybrid between a cat, a snake and a bat, that sort of thing. She seeks another life. Her mother's a drunk and she goes out at night and gets involved in stuff. And that's where issue one ends. And issue two continues pretty much in the same vein. The art is another step up, I think. I was lucky enough to see an early version of this Ian sent me through, and I think I described issue one as being a ballet, and this really is. Yeah. It's a dance. It's a dance over the rooftops, and each fight has got such a martial arts grace to it, almost, with samurai swords and striking. And there's a great scene where a man fights a monster in it, which is so well choreographed and looks really good. But she's only young, so she's still at school. There's a mystery about who her father is and where he might be, and that's not particularly explained, and I suspect that's going to be explained further on down the line. Ian mixes the first few pages are a series of splash pages, which is quite a cool little way to pull you into a comic. The single and double page splashes, and they're just gorgeous, absolutely amazing. And then he pulls you into more traditional paneled sequences. There's an opening. It opens on a nightmare, which I think is a great way to open a book because we get inside the character's head from the off. And the way he draws that and some of the weird and strange shit that's in this comic has got, it's really unusual. It's something you don't see. It's done. Okay, it's fantasy and okay, it's fighting and okay, it's monsters and stuff like that. But it's not, I can't really compare it to anything else that out there on the shelves. So I got a great sketch along with mine. I got a Master of Kung Fu, which I know just because Ian knew I like the Master of Kung Fu, he drew it and sent it as part of the Kickstarter awards. They're always on time. They've always got a great system set up. They've always got a great load of extras. You get a load of little prints with it and stuff like that. Got the website here, so www.accentukcomics.com. Dude, update your site, it looks a mess. If you go to @accentuk is Dave West, who's the writer. That's his. We spoke to Dave quite a few times. I've reviewed quite a few of his books. He's a good writer. And I don't think Ian is on Twitter. I think you have to go to Instagram to find him. So @ian.ashcroft. Yeah, on Instagram. He's someone I recommend following. I did some interviews with him for the Hellbreaker stuff on Space Warp. And I worked with him on Little Heroes strip as well, which was equally as good. And he very kindly sent me the pages to that, which I love and are definitely getting put away because I think this geezer's going somewhere. And I think the big companies and obviously Pat picking him up is a great sign for this guy's future in comics. Yeah, good stuff. There you go. That's my one.
Nice.
Nice one.
There you go. A lot of show notes that I need to put in the list this week, and we've gone longer than we have for quite some time.
Yeah, we have, haven't we? And we've got some extras.
Thank you for sticking with us, folks. Yeah, there'll probably be some extras right at the end, so stay tuned after the credits. We don't really have credits, do we?
No.
Who knows? But what we do have we have an inbox. So if there's anything we've talked about this week that you want to discuss, debate, did we get wrong? Did we?
Probably.
Are we completely off the ball on what we're talking about that you need to complain to us? Send them to Tony. No.
Feel free to do a sly subtweet if you don't like
it. Yeah, always the best way.
God, don't start that. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be announcing future guests and all kinds of things, and probably retweeting the likes of Thought Bubble, obviously, and the exciting things that they've got planned for the next couple of months.
Mm. We've got a few scheduled. You did a bit of scheduling the other day, didn't we? Yes. We've got some good guests coming up. Yeah, as well as today's. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Oh, he's like one of the fam now, isn't he, Gareth?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's forever cursed. Unlike the Facebook, which is facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and the fantastic community that is Awesome Comics Talk. Go search for that group, find it, join it, just let us know you listen to the show and we'll let you in. Simple as that. And then you can just talk about comics without anyone shamelessly selling their comics to you.
I've got to get the phase three of that competition going. I was a bit preoccupied this week with shit going on.
Yeah, Dan. There's a lot going on, and Dan's been very busy and had other stuff. So
it'll be this Monday. It'll kick off on that.
So join the community, Awesome Comics Talk, to find out more about that. Thank you.
We've quite a few new members this week, actually.
Yes, welcome.
Good. Welcome to the Thunderdome, and thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review. Just helps get the word out about the show, the wonderful comics we talk about, and the wonderful guests. Never mind the nonsense that, like, the three hosts say. It's the guests and the comics.
You're out.
Yeah, that's what everyone's for. And if you listen to us on other networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other ones are there, Tony?
We're on Pod Wet Arse P Word.
I mean, Gareth, what can I say?
Where do you go from that?
Like that song, but whenever I watch it, it feels like watching like sex scenes with my parents.
Have you ever seen that knobby bloke Ben Shapiro do like
he
can't bring himself to say the P thing, so he just calls it wet ass P word. P word.
Oh dear God.
Sorry, Vince. I realise that you're talking with the velocity of someone who's desperate to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
How do you know? How do you know, dude? Are you the
same? Whistling.
Very much so.
They could just mute their microphones, but I have to say things like, where can people find us on Twitter, etc., Tony?
Tributepress.bigcartel.com for all your comics needs are not safe for work. There you go. We're just going out at the moment with a book. We've got Tiger Styles going out in the post in the next few weeks, and Atomic Hercules 3 is on the blocks, ready to go.
Nice. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at vanguardcomic.com. And you can be Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Daniel Elizabeth Butcher. You're going to pay for that. But anyway, yeah, me, you can find me on the socials at Jester Diablo, where artwork, comics, or just me just posting pictures of myself looking at the sun with a pair of sunglasses on. Yes, I'm that guy. So find me on social media.
They're the G.I. Joe glasses, though, aren't they?
The G.I. Joe glasses. So do you know what I mean? I'm infinitely better than everyone else. Apart from Gareth, our wonderful guest, where can people find you?
I'm everywhere on the internet as Girthink, which is spelt GRTHINK.
Yes, not the word girth.
That's the only fence. We should get a fucking like thing from them, because we're always mentioning OnlyFans every show. There's an OnlyFans joke.
Yeah,
I was considering setting one up. Just
there you go. What better way to finish the show than that? Thank you very much for listening, everyone. Have a brilliant week. We hope you're safe and healthy, and just looking after each other, because we all love you, even Tony.
What?
So take care of yourselves, read loads of comics, and from all of us here on the show, Dan, Tony, Gareth and myself, have a brilliant week, and what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Very good.
Do you know what, it's rare that I'm going to say this, But the boys were on point. Gareth, where's your timing, man? Where's your timing,
I thought the joke
darling?
Was that we're all supposed to be off time.
There's no jokes here.
What do you mean, joke?
What are you talking about? We don't joke on the show. Disgraceful.
We are
Bye,
jokes.
Everyone.
Bye.
See ya. You should have left some hummus or something, saying noiseless to eat.
What's that?
Hummus. Hang on. No, yeah. Dan, do you just eat hummus on its own?
Tara Masalata.
No, but like if you're going to make a noise on camera...
Then you've got to dip something into the hummus, Dan. You've got to get like soft, a cracker brown bread.
Yeah, it can be something that's not crunchy, can't it?
Yeah, something crunchy. You're still going to have a crunch.
No, it doesn't have to be crunchy. You can eat something that hasn't got a crunch on it.
Not such
as... That's why I dip... What were we talking about earlier?
Your balls. Vince?
That's why I dip balls.
Fair enough.
That's why I dip Twiglets in coffee.
That is insane. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what I do.
That's pretty mental.
Of all the things I've ever said to you, is that the worst thing I'm going to say? I'm going to say it's not, is it?
Yeah, that is the worst thing. It's pretty close to it.
That's
okay. I don't know. Who's vibrating? Dan, is that you
again? I got a message from change.orgs about fucking hedgehogs.
You should stop doing it.
And sit down in the outtakes if you want.
Yeah, Vince can get a jumper with a hedgehog on it or something if he wants.
Do you know what? I fucking totally would. I love hedgehogs.
I had a pee in a bush today. Oh, I took the dog for such a long walk. I was really desperate for a wee. And I went and had a pee in a bush. It's difficult to hold
older,
Johnson and also the end of a dog leash as well at the same time.
You can't hold on to your wee as much when you get older, can you?
You can't. It's more difficult. I've got one of those extendable dog leagues. You know those extendable dog leagues? I've got one of them. And the fucking... He's like legging it off. And I'm thinking, right, I'm holding my Johnson in one hand and I've got a fucking this lead in the other.
I would love it. He's running across a field being pulled by a dog with his fucking knob in his hand. And like people going... What the hell's that? While he's screaming, come back!
He's only little, but when he gets going, he can really like pull you along with the lead. You know what I mean? I'm thinking what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
And I was concentrating, right, it's in your left hand, your knob's in your right hand. You know what I mean? You don't want to sort of jerk one back and not the other.
Any unfortunate jerking.
Yeah, be careful. And anyway, so he didn't. So then he ran back towards me and I thought, well, I'm still pissing and he's running towards me. What's he going to do? I don't want him like biting a dong or something because he's got a previous of biting me a lot.
Like, it'll be like a fucking like mace spray. Just get him right in the fucking. Yeah. Get him in the eyes.
Take this, you little bastard.
Aim for the eyes.
Yeah, it's quite a strong stream as well because I've been going, you know, I was desperate to go.
Coming out of your yellow cable.
It's longer, isn't it? Yeah.
God, Gareth, we've missed you.